This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all Place to Be Nation.
Broadcasting from the state-of-the-art L-shaped studios at beautiful and serene Ho-Ho-Loo Plaza in Vancouver, British Columbia. Greg Phillips and Nick Toon are the hard-traveling fanhounds.
It's the Hard Traveling Fanboys!
I don't know why I'm heavily breathing into the microphone. Like, I was about to say, I'm Greg Phillips.
That wasn't supposed to be audience applause. That's just Greg after walking up the
stairs. No, that was just me after walking up the stairs. And anyway, yeah, I'm here.
What I said. Good job.
What's amazing about walking up the stairs, Nick, is that our studio is on the first floor. There are no stairs.
True. I don't know how you walked up the stairs. I suppose it's the set of collapsible stairs we keep in the closet there with the Basham sticker to help us grab any brass rings that may appear.
Yes, R. Kelly used to stay in our closet, but we've booted him out in recent weeks. So,
yeah,
so
he heard Ross's rendition of some of his music and was deeply offended.
Yes.
We should probably check to make sure he didn't leave any things, items, or people behind in the closet.
Or any piles of urine. But
piles
speaking
of urine?
Speaking of urine, we are the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
What does that have to do with urine?
Well, the quality of our show has often been compared to that of an old man's urinary stream. Slow and inconsistent.
Fair. That's fair.
Hi, folks. Producer Todd here, and I can confirm this.
He's Nick Duke, obviously. And we're here to bring you the latest edition in our series called Hard Travelers for Hire. It is where we, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, journey movie by movie through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, all the while my voice cracking and turning into, Bob Dylan circa 1975, singing about, that guy that did that thing. So, with all that being said, we are here arriving tonight to Ant-Man and the Wasp, the latest entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and actually, to date, the latest entry. We'll next be attacking Captain Marvel when that comes out. But to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp, we wanted to bring on longtime friend of the show, longtime Place to Be Nation podcasting guru, I don't think she has a consistent nickname, but I have nicknamed her at times the Village Bicycle of Place to Be Nation, our good friend, the talented, the fantastic, my co-host now on a brand new wrestling podcast, Talking WCW, which we will mention several other times throughout the course of this broadcast, Jennifer Smith. God, I don't know what's coming over me. Welcome,
and that's just how
show.
Greg breathes anytime he's around a woman.
That's very true. That's very true. Except when it's not. But it's mostly true.
That's you riding the Village Bicycle.
Oh. Oh man.
Well,
we need audience sound effects for that. That's where in the 90s sitcom. The audience would have gone, ooh!
Maybe Todd can add that in.
Yeah,
I think we just did it. I don't know if he needs to. Let's just take that bit and play it over.
And then you can like superimpose the Seinfeld sound effects of
The only thing is to have audience sound effects. Wouldn't we need an audience? That would be a problem.
Well, that's depressing. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, boys. Thanks for having me again.
Always. It's always good to, damn it, I messed up the line. You didn't set me up for it. You're supposed to say, it's my pleasure to be on the show. And then I was going to say, well, of course it's your pleasure. And then I would have screwed up the line too. The whole thing screwed up. Fuck it.
Do you just want to do all of my parts for the rest of the show so I don't have to say anything?
No, in fact, quite the opposite. All right, my suggestion, Nick, is that you do all of my parts for me.
Well, that's not really unusual for me to be doing all your parts, but that's another for another time.
In any event, I've gotten all flustered. Jennifer, how does this night see you? What a weird sentence. Let me rephrase that. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. It's just been a busy day, and there are men in my bedroom trying to mount
things.
Trying
to mount.
So, yeah.
So in other words, it's a Wednesday.
So just a regular night here at old Casa Smith.
Hey, it is hump day, right? So that's what that commercial from Geico told me on their little commercials countdown where they show the old commercials that are better than the new commercials.
We're doing a great job so far.
Yeah. We're not here to talk about commercials. We're not here to talk about Bob Dylan or murder victims or
Cardi B.
Rappers. We're not here to talk about any of that doo-doo. We're
Cardi B, you say?
Mm-hmm.
I never even heard of that person before. Is she that lady on that commercial with Steve Carell during the whatever that football game was that was played the other day that was really boring?
Yeah, the Super Bowl. Her and Lil Jon and Steve Carell are trying to sell me Pepsi now. So you got that going for him.
I don't like Pepsi, Nick.
Me either.
I don't care for it myself.
I do enjoy Steve Carell, and he looks very good in that commercial, but no thank you.
I was going to say, Steve Carell is actually it seems to be a better-looking man now than he was when he was young.
Yeah, he's aging into it. Like, the gray really works for him.
I never would have considered Steve Carell a handsome man in his early days. In fact, I would have considered him slightly concerning. You know, he kind of had a little bit of that, you know, serial killer vibe to him, the idiot savant kind of vibe to him. But now he's aging into this dignified George Clooney-like figure.
He's a 50-year-old hottie instead of a 40-year-old virgin.
Well, that's not for me to say. But, yes, point taken on that. But Pepsi sucks. You know what Nick likes, though, is RC Cola.
I do.
I'd like you to explain. To me, RC Cola and Pepsi have always tasted the same, basically.
No, RC Cola to me is a little bitier. You know, I've always liked sodas that have a little bite to them. I like that. And, of course, let's not forget that RC Cola is a product of the great city of Columbus, Georgia.
Papio Daniel Mayer, right?
Here you are.
Anyway, we're wasting a lot of time here burning the midnight oil. We need to get into this. Ant-Man and the Wasp. You guys know the deal. We're doing the way we do this is we pull up the movie. We're watching it on Netflix, all three of us right now, I think. And you can pull up your DVD or Blu-ray copy, your streaming copy, however you want to watch the movie. We don't care. We won't turn you into the fuzz, as they say. So no one says that. But we won't. But what we will do is watch this movie, and we are going to hit play on it, or as I'm doing right now, consistently hitting back so that it doesn't automatically play. We are going to do that in 3, 2, 1. Play? Question mark.
I got it.
There it is. It's playing. It's going.
I see subtitles.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. This, of course, is the follow-up to the Ant-Man film, which came out in 2016. Correct, Nick?
I 15? Think so. Or was it 15? Yeah, wasn't it the summer of 15?
It probably was 15, yeah. So let's just ignore what I just said. And so this is the follow-up to Ant-Man, which came out at some point before Ant-Man and the Wasp.
It did.
And Ant-Man is a film that I'm a fairly big fan of, and a film that Nick is not a big fan of, and a film that Jennifer is a big fan of.
I am.
Jennifer, you were excited about you liked Ant-Man like I did, and you were pretty excited about this one, I'm assuming.
I was.
This is a misnomer on your part right out of the gate. It's not that I don't like the movie. There has not been a Marvel movie at this point that I haven't liked.
No, your exact words to me were, I would rather have hot lava poured on my testicles for 2 consecutive hours than ever watch that film again.
Well, that's a bit much, but you know, just because I don't have it very high at all or dead last in the Marvel pantheon coming into this entry of Hard Travelers for Hire doesn't mean I don't like the film. It's an entertaining enough watch is the way I would describe it.
Very good. Jenny, you were very excited about this one coming into it, Ant-Man and the Wasp, right? Scott Ant-Man and Hope
Wasp Woman. Yes. And I was disappointed that they didn't call it that, but...
Of course. Who wouldn't be?
Right. Yes. I enjoyed Ant-Man very much, like the last time I was on this show. And, you know, I knew that they would do bigger and better things on the sequel. And I was excited for Michelle Pfeiffer to join the cast.
Ah, yes. Michelle Pfeiffer, the woman of many a comic book fan's childhood dreams, right, Nick?
Oh, God. You ain't kidding.
Now, Nick, I always like to turn to you for a lot of the sort of business talk because you work for a major financial institution. and if you need to explain exactly what it is that they do, if you need to. But you don't.
I don't need to. I've never needed to.
You know, from your standpoint, what do you think the business reasons would be why this movie wasn't called Scott Ant-Man and Hope Waspel?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps because the original characters weren't called Scott Ant-Man and Hope Wasp Woman, and the character has always been known as Wasp instead of Wasp Woman, possibly for some licensing reasons, possibly some trademarks and copyrights and quid pro quos and statutes of limitations, of course. So that'd be my reasoning.
Well, sir, I can't claim to have followed all that legal jargon, but I'm sure it makes sense. Listen, I don't make the decisions. I understand that there are other things. In a perfect world, it would have been called a perfect world, but that was already taken. And then it would have been called Scott Ant-Man and Hope Wasp. What the god awful hell sound was that?
I'm sorry, I didn't mute my phone, so that was my notification that somebody posted in a group that I'm in. Steve Willey posted in Weekly Comics Discussion.
Awesome!
Way to go,
well,
Steve.
That was a bitch and guitar solo thrown in right in the middle of our.
Yes, it's by Wild Stallions from the film Bill and Ted.
Bill and Ted, Excellent Adventure or Bogus Journey?
Excellent Adventure.
One thing already that I'll say that is an improvement from the first film, doing away with Evangeline Lilly's unfortunate haircut from the first film was a wise move on their part.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. And we've missed all of the first part of the movie there. With their nonsense.
Yes, it was setting up sort of, kind of almost a little bit of a rebooting the audience on what this character is all about. Because a lot's happened in the MCU since 2015. So I think it's kind of reminding people of who Ant-Man is, who Hank Pym is, and the fact that, you know, Janet Van Dyne was lost in the microverse all these years ago. It also sets up the premise of this film, which is that as a result of what happened in the first movie, now Hank believes that he can go into the microverse, or someone can go into the microverse, and actually extract Janet from there, and that she is still alive somewhere in there. So that kind of sets up the basic plot and premise of this movie, is the quest to get Janet extracted from the microverse. Here we see Scott Lang, played expertly by Paul Rudd, with his daughter, whose name is someone?
Cassie,
thank you. I should have turned on the subtitles, which I haven't done yet, and I'm doing right now. So the same actor, of course, the actress, I should say, playing Cassie from the last film. She's great, by the way.
She is
great. I want to get that out of the way. She is outstanding. Her relationship with Paul Rudd in this movie, with Scott Ant-Man in this movie, is one of the strongest parts of the film. I thought it was one of the strongest parts of the first movie. We talked about that on our last review, but here she's a little bit older, obviously, as you know, time does work that way. And she is just really, she's cute, she's funny, she is very convincing with her lines. And I hope to see a lot more of her in the MCU going forward. Thoughts, guys?
Yeah, she's pretty good.
Yeah, I think she looks kind of like him, so that kind of reinforces it. Mm-hmm. And then she, it's clear that she just adores him. Like she's really in tune with his quirkiness, and she's kind of weird and quirky too. And they just fit really well together. And I love what they're doing here. This little maze that they've made throughout the house, because he's been under house arrest. And you know, it's just, it's adorable. It's believable. And, I just think it adds a lot of depth to both of them.
Totally agreed. And just in terms of the chronology of the MCU, this picks up a lot of the threads from – or not a lot of the threads. A lot of those are the first movie, but it also picks up after the events of Civil War, where Scott made the decision to help Captain America, and this is showing what the ramifications of that decision were. By doing that, he's broken the terms of his probation, basically. Now he's under house arrest, and he's close to finishing out his term of house arrest.
Yeah, I think they specifically say he has 3 days.
3 days.
Like, something like that.
Yep. So it's kind of a nice way of playing into that old one last score story, right? Because mm-hmm. the typical story is, you know, we're going to get one last score and then go into retirement. Here, he's really just trying to ride it out. He doesn't want to have one last score, but he's kind of pulled into one last sort of heist, in this case, in the microverse, thanks to Hank and Hope trying to get Janet out of the microverse. So, and here we are introduced to my favorite new character in the movie, Agent
yes.
Wu.
Yes.
This guy is awesome.
He's such a dick, sort of, in the scene to the little girl, to Cassie.
Yeah, but this is great.
It's so funny, though.
This is really good writing. And this actor is really funny. I've seen him in a few other things before, but he's got great comedic timing. But he was awesome here. I love him as Wu, and I hope that he becomes sort of their Agent Ross, who's going to be presumably in all the Black Panther movies. I hope Wu is going to be in all the Ant-Man movies from here on out, because he's got such good chemistry with Paul Rudd, and even with the little girl here, he's got mm-hmm. amazing chemistry with her as just this – he is a dick, but he's also – you know, he's trying to pretend like he's trying to be a nice guy, but he's just the most uptight prick in the world.
Yeah. I love Scott's reaction to him, too.
How does this guy have this job?
Right.
Yeah, this is like a character that would be in a more traditional comedy. Like, he wouldn't be out of place in something like Tommy Boy or as like a side character in mm-hmm. you know, one of the 90s SNL movies, basically.
Well, I mean,
SNL cast movies.
He's not white, so he would be a little bit out of place, but
that's fair.
Comedically.
There was Tim Meadows with the ladies' man.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for the most part, you're right. There weren't a lot of wasn't a lot of diversity in the supporting cast in those days, but nonetheless, Chris Farley was a fat guy. So.
A white fat guy, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But there usually would only be room for one of those guys in the cast, and he was usually the side guy.
I like how
and his fat friend, his nickname was Minivan.
I like how the ex-wife and the new husband, that they're all, you know, kind of co-parenting, all sort of in harmony.
Yeah, in particular, his ex-wife's husband is now, like, hugging him and being really mm-hmm. touchy-feely, mm-hmm. which would make me uncomfortable, but Scott seems to be okay with it. Maybe they have a more intense relationship than they're letting on. What do you think? Maybe there's a little bit of hanky-panky going on here behind the scenes. Not behind the scenes, but, you know, when the girl's not a little girl's not around, do you think they're, you know, having a little menage a three?
That sounds like a question I would ask. What is wrong with you, Greg?
I'm not hearing any answers. not a single answer. Or
well, I mean, it's headcanon for me now. I didn't think about it previously, but I'm
fair
good
enough.
With that.
Nick, what do you think?
I don't know.
Enlightening, as always. So, to this point in the MCU, we've gotten... What came directly before this? I've already lost it. This is after Infinity War. Which, yes. of course, is the bleakest moment in the MCU. The heroes lose.
Mm-hmm.
The half of life, as we know it, is wiped out.
Even though, I guess,
life as we know it.
based on the timing of the post-credit scene that we'll talk about a little bit later on, this actually seemingly would take place either right before the events of Infinity War or during the events of Infinity War.
Yeah, concurrently, right. But in terms of like setting the tone, this is kind of a palate cleanser of sorts for the MCU because we have just been bombarded with just this this bleak, to me, orgasmic movie, but to many people, bleak, that left us, you know, devastated as our heroes have fallen. So now here's a movie that's kind of not really to do with any of that. There's no ending stakes here to speak of. This is really very small, the smallest stakes possible in the microverse right. of one person's life. And even the big, like, threat is just the threat of this being hands. Nick, we haven't heard from you a lot, and that is because I don't want to spoil your opinions, but it is because of I'm sure take on the film. But what are your thoughts on this film as a palate cleanser and its role in the greater MCU?
You know, it certainly attempts to be a palate cleanser. I'll give you that. It's telling a little bit of a lighter story, a story with less stakes, but that makes sense. How can you go bigger than the stakes in Infinity War? You really can't. Trying to make you laugh a little bit more than Infinity War did, of course, and succeeding to a certain degree, I suppose.
Yes. And and you know what's funny about that is I don't even know that I would necessarily – I agree that what it is trying to do that to a degree, but Infinity War was pretty funny at times. It had some really funny lines in it. But this is going for more of that lighter, smaller scale. What about you, Jenny? Coming out of a movie like Infinity War, what do you make going from the literal end of life as we know it being the stakes versus there's a tiny lady stuck in bacteria and we have to help her?
Well, I guess I came at it more from like a sequel to the first one as opposed to a continuation mm-hmm. of the MCU. So, mm-hmm. I wasn't really focused on Infinity War when I was going into this movie. And funniest story about going into this movie, my mother was here in town when it came out, and we went to a Mexican restaurant, and we had 2-for-1 margaritas that night. And my mom's a lightweight, and she got pretty tipsy. And I was like, Ant-Man's out. Let's go see it. And she was like, yeah. So me and my mom drunkenly watched this movie in the theater. And then the post-credit scene, she hadn't seen Infinity War. So she didn't get it, and I had to explain it to her. So I kind of spoiled the Infinity War for her at that point.
In my head canon, there's like 5 little kids sitting behind you in the theater that haven't seen Infinity War either, and you've just spoiled the entire movie for them.
I waited till we got out, and that's
so fun.
Yeah, but that was the first and only time I've ever drunkenly watched a movie in the theater with my mother. So this movie has a little bit of a
strong emotional ties. Yeah, I understand that. I totally get it. That's how I feel about Weekend at Bernie's too.
Did you watch that drunk with your mother as well?
Yes, oddly. Good. At age 8. actually, she was high on LSD and I was high on horse, as they called it in those days.
RC Cola.
No, none of that happened. I made all that up. I did watch it on VHS, though, and it was a fine movie. Weekend at Bernie's 2. Go watch it, folks. Great scene where Bernie is in the conga line. Anybody? No? Nothing? Fair enough. Bunch of primitives I'm working with here that haven't studied the Weekend at Bernie series. Well, in any event, so we've established that the premise here is they're trying to rescue Janet. Here's Hope and Scott trying to reconnect right now for the first time in quite some time as Scott's actions in Civil War put Hank and Hope in a tough bind because now they're exposed to the government and they are wanted criminals as a result of presumably what they did in the first movie. So it's a big convoluted deal here. They're trying to be under the radar while getting this tech back that they need. And and I love that Scott's wearing his pajamas essentially. But So in terms of what you were expecting going in from an Ant-Man sequel, what did you guys want from an Ant-Man sequel? And then when you come into the movie, and at this point, what are you thinking versus your expectations?
A disposal of the entire supporting cast other than Hank Pym and Hope, honestly. And we did not get that, unfortunately. I'd say the entire supporting cast. That's not true. He can keep his ex-wife and the boyfriend and the little girl. But all his security buddies, let's kick those guys off to the curb. And instead, here they are, still eating up screen time and being painfully unfunny. So that was my first real disappointment on that front.
Do you know it was a lot funnier than any of these characters? I will say, Nick.
What's that, Greg?
The character of Malekith, the dark elf.
He wasn't supposed to be funny.
Exactly. Nonetheless, Jenny, your thoughts on what you expected going into this movie, what you wanted going into this movie, and how it compared to what you got in terms of the plot and the what direction they went in.
I expected some more comedy, which I think delivered, as opposed to Nick. I wanted action. I wanted more of the shrinking and enlargening, which we also do get. I really like the action sequence, the chase scene in particular in this movie. I wanted to see the quantum realm in more detail, which I think we got as well. And then, you know, I wanted to see Hope be reunited with her mom. So, I mean, it just really checked all the boxes for me.
Excellent. A tale of two expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure. This is kind of the rare movie where in the MCU, because I have no attachment to the character of Ant-Man. I don't know anything about Ant-Man, in fact. Everything I know about Ant-Man, I've learned through the excellent Marvel Age podcast, which you can find periodically right here on the Place to Be Nation podcast.
And I'll give you the cliff notes of that. Silver Age Ant-Man sucks.
Indeed. So I had no connection to the character and his universe. Don't know anything about him until that first Ant-Man movie, which I enjoyed quite a bit. And actually, it's a movie I like more every time I watch it. So Ant-Man and the Wasp, I wanted more of their dynamic from the first movie, which I really enjoyed, and actually think that she was underutilized a little bit in terms of we didn't get to see her actually be the Wasp in that movie. Mm-hmm. I was excited to see her kick ass in the movie, which we've already seen to this point. She had a great badass fight scene. I wanted them to introduce a much better villain than what we had in the first movie, which they did, in my opinion, both in the form of Ghost, who we'll talk about in a little bit, and in the form of terrific character actor Walton Goggins, who always plays seemingly a scummy villain, and he's certainly quite good at it here. And I wanted to see better action, which they delivered, in my opinion, which we'll again talk about later, to go along with the better villain, and just more fun at the movies. I didn't have any kind of it wasn't like in Infinity War, where I had certain things that I wanted to see going in. If they didn't deliver those things, I was going to be disappointed. So I think free of expectations, it helps this movie a lot in my mind, because I wasn't going in with sort of this idea in my mind of the ideal Ant-Man movie. Sort of like, you know, kind of to tie it into an opposite of what Nick has said about Thor Ragnarok. For him, that movie, no matter how good it is, because he came into it and he wants you want a certain Thor movie when you get the title Ragnarok.
Well,
and because
specifically,
it didn't
deliver that,
it's not going to be able to deliver for you because it didn't match the what you had in mind. So right, I'm not talking about from a specific plot element. You know what I'm saying? So I don't have that with Ant-Man, and I was actually really pleased with what we've gotten to this point, this direction of going into the quantum realm, which I was excited about. I figured they would go that route. I didn't know.
You're not
going to
call it the microverse again?
I love the microverse. It's a DC concept. I'm a DC guy. I mean, let's be honest. So I speak in terms that I'm familiar with. You know, Asgard is Krypton to me, so I just call it Krypton from now on.
I really like the shrinking. They do it a lot in this movie, obviously, but I really like how they shrink the building down and the cars. It just looks really cool. They pull it off.
That was something that they introduced in the first movie and really did a great job with the shrinking effects, but they use it a lot more, I feel like, in this one, the shrinking and enlarging, as we can all relate to, right, Nick?
Yes, absolutely. Not so much the enlarging, but
the mainly the shrinking, exactly.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is at one point in the movie, Ant-Man actually goes in on himself somehow. It's amazing.
I mean, like, if they only had Ant-Man grow like 1.5 times larger at any given time, that would be a version of enlarging that I could get familiar with. But other than that, you know, this whole, like, you know, growing 10 times, 15 times larger, I don't know what the hell that is. That's some bullshit right there.
Now, this guy is off-putting to me, this henchman of Walton Goggins' character.
But you got to imagine, by the way, this whole shrinking and, like, enlarging thing, like, they got to take these regulators into the bedroom, right? Like, you have to assume that there's some pretty kinky shit going on with these things.
Wasn't it in the Ultimate Universe, or was it in the Chuck Austin Avengers where Janet shrinks down for where Hank shrinks down?
That was in the Ultimates. Yes.
Pleasing Janet.
That
was in the Ultimates. Yeah. He shrank down so he could go inside her vagina.
No,
or at least it's implied. It's implied. So like he comes, like she's laying there in the bed, like looking all, you know, in the throes of passion and what have you. And then like you kind of see him pop up, and like you see his head coming up from between her legs, but then he kind of like expands, and like there's like moisture in his hair and that he's been in there, you know, like I'm guessing like kind of like a speed bag in boxing. He's just kind of been working the clit like that, but
oh,
I don't know.
My,
you know?
God. Isn't that more work? Like, wouldn't that be harder than actually?
Hey man, listen, you know, you've been married. These two have been together for years at this point. It's one of those things where you're just kind of, you know, spicing. I don't know. You know, and I'm sure she's been down the chocolate trail in small form as well. So it's just one of those things.
They could have tied that in to the movies with Michael Douglas's, you know, diagnosis a few years ago.
I got cancer. But that it wouldn't be throat cancer at that point. It would be cancer of the entire body.
Syphilis of the eye. Klondike Bill suffers from syphilis of the eye. What is happening to this
what
show?
What are we doing?
We're having a much more entertaining discussion than the movie we're watching. That's what's happening.
No! Take it back. Do-do-do-do.
Sometimes I wonder, like, is it just me? Like, would y'all have this conversation if I wasn't here, or...
Are you talking about the specifically Hank Pym going inside?
Yeah,
Janet's vagina.
We
probably would have brought that up.
Okay, good.
Yeah, right. We have to repeat it just so people get that mental image. You know, yeah, I think we would have had that conversation at some point.
Tend to bring out the more Cardi B call it?
And you gotta assume also, like, I mean, Greg, you're probably not familiar with this, but you know, Jenny, you've seen the Lemmy Winks episode of South Park, right? Where, you know, the gerbil and the asshole, Mr. Slave. You have to assume that she's probably pulled a Lemmy Winks here on him as well. Like, you just kind of are exploring all your options with the shrinking and the embiggening and that thing and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a good way to practice, you know, because timing is everything when it comes to that. You don't want to accidentally enlarge when people aren't ready for that. So,
or do you? Maybe that's what's
it's like a training. It's a training exercise, really.
There you go. But then that begs the question: like, they have to wear the suits apparently to do the
because
that's where the regulators are. So, how does that work? Can they just put the belt on, and that way their bodies, you know, can shrink and enlarge at will? I don't know.
Yeah,
or maybe they make a like.
Can you shrink and enlarge only certain parts of your body too, or does it have to be your entire body?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'm sure that at the end of the movie, when Hank gets his wife back, I'm sure that
he will
start to develop some sort of technology to be more specific in those areas.
I'm sure he does, and given her age, he probably also has to develop some technology to liven that thing up a bit, but that's neither here nor there.
I don't know. She looks pretty good for her age, though.
She does. She does. But she's been in the quantum realm for, you know, God knows how long at this point.
So you think there's probably dust in there?
Yeah, dust, yeah. Yeah,
quantum dust.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, we have young, hot Marissa Tomei as Aunt May. So the dust in the hooch has to go somewhere, and I suppose this is where it's going.
Are you suggesting that dust in the hooch is a transmittable disease of some kind?
No, I wasn't, but now I'm getting the idea. Now I'm having the mental image of Marissa Tomei giving Michelle Pfeiffer
dust in the hooch.
Transmittable disease. I'm kind of into it, so thank you for that, Greg.
Well, I've given you enough material for the evening. This scene that we just watched in the kitchen was awesome, by the way.
Yes, it was.
This was a great example of one of the things that I'm going to bring up during this discussion, or was going to bring up, is the action is significantly better in this movie, I thought, than the first one. This movie has some of, as we've talked about, the action in general the MCU has picked up since the Russo brothers got involved, but this movie has some shockingly great action scenes in it to me.
I wouldn't say like it's better. I just think there's like, well, it's probably better, but there's also, I think, a little bit more of it, and it's just, it's just more impressive. And I think that's just because of the, of them using the size and then the ghost, her function,
her ability.
Yeah, her ability, yeah. There looks really cool and adds a lot in a fight scene.
Great character design, almost night and day from what we got with what was that damn character's name, Nick?
Mockingbird? Yellow Jacket. No, Mockingbird Adrian Palicki's character,
yeah.
Agent Shield.
Oh Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, always.
Anyway, no, but just night and day from what we got with Yellow Jacket. A very interesting villain, both from a character perspective, with her not really being a villain per se. Mm-hmm. She's just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that visually,
how does this not kill him, by the way?
With the fist to the neck?
Yeah, I would think that would have like destroyed some arteries. Like,
well, she's not
more
solid.
Yeah, she's not solid there.
It's like when the Reverse Flash will vibrate his arm through somebody's body and then hold it there and threaten to solidify it, which would crush their heart.
I guess. It just seemed pretty tame.
No, I didn't bother me. I mean, it seemed pretty standard for phasing characters. They do that. It's kind of like Wolverine's old, don't make me use the third claw, bub. You know, where he'd put the two claws around their neck and then he'd never use the middle one because it would obviously kill him. But Kitty Pryde has done that kind of stuff before. You know, it's one of those things.
Well, the actress that plays Ghost, I watched her on a sci-fi show called Killjoys, and she's badass on that show, and I always wanted her to be in a superhero movie. So I was really stoked when she was going to be in this one, but I didn't want her to be a villain because she's, like, super awesome, especially in fight scenes, and she's a great actress. I was really happy that she was in this movie because I really wanted to see her, but I kind of wish she was in like a bigger superhero role. Like,
well, at least they don't make her like a dastardly villain. Like,
yeah,
she's pretty,
that's true.
She's pretty relatable as far as the villains go. Like, she's the one where you kind of go, she's literally just trying to survive. She's not actually trying to hurt people.
And they set her up. If you pay attention to the end of the movie, they say something like, which I honestly didn't notice the first time I watched the movie, but this most recent watching of it, I love how they say at the very end, out to help. The whole point of Scott going back into the quantum realm is to help out their new ghostly friend or whatever. So it's now she's not a bad guy per se. She's no longer having to do those things to survive because she's got people helping her. Of course, those people are turned to dust at the end of the movie, so maybe she's going to have to turn back to crime after all.
Wrong kids died.
They've set her up. They've set her up going forward to be a potentially interesting character, I think, in the MCU.
I hope so.
Another great. I will confess to Nick that the entire line about the oatmeal stuff that was just done was not funny to me. the reintroduction of our friends from the first movie, which I loved them in. But Scott gets a great line here, which I've already forgotten, so it must not have been great, but a good line here when he's upset about the size of his desk. and then Janet tries to get him back on point. Hope, not Janet. Well, I know, I always call her Janet because it's just weird to me that Janet is not the Wasp. But anyway, she tries to get him back on point, and then he says, "Hope, please, focus," which is just great. And perfectly Paul Rudd. As a big Paul Rudd fan, I really appreciated that. One of the interesting things, I talked to Nick about this off the air. When I watched this movie in the theater, I, of course, was not intoxicated. I was actually intoxicated. And I did not find the movie as funny as I wanted it to be. Like I that was the only aspect of it that didn't deliver for me, was I didn't think it was as funny as the first one. And I still don't think it was as funny as the first one, but on this most recent watch, just the other day, to me, it was way funnier than I remembered it being in the theater. I laughed at a bunch of, like that line I just mentioned to you, that made me laugh. A lot of the stuff at the beginning of the movie made me laugh. I found it a lot funnier on this watch. Nick, did you find any difference in the two from watching it in the theater versus watching it on home video, as I will call it, even though it's streaming?
Not really. I mean, like, there are still a few funny moments throughout the movie, but for a movie that relies so heavily on comedy, its success rate for me is far too low for it to be effective in that regard.
Do you think it relies on the comedy, though?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. I think every time those fucking douchebags are on screen, which is one time too many, but yes.
And they're funny.
They're not.
Except for that first scene.
We can, okay, listen, the Luis debate, we've already had it on our previous Ant-Man podcast. We're never going to agree on that. Fucking T.I. and the dude from The Dark Knight add nothing to anything. They're terrible. They're terrible actors. They're written badly. They add nothing to any scene.
You telling me that David Dalmachian is a terrible actor?
Yes, I am.
I just wanted to say his name. But I like him. I like him in these movies. What's wrong with him?
I mean, I think it's okay for them to be just like, you know, like mildly quirky and just like, you know, kind of a step up from extras. Right. They're in their spot. They're just like kind of normal dudes. They're not meant to do much.
Okay, I agree, but why do we have multiple scenes with them throughout the movie?
We don't have that many scenes with them in the movie.
There's like three.
Yeah, which is three too many.
It's not that bad.
No, it's not.
I mean, you have a smart hat.
You guys find them funny. I don't. Like, in the least. They bring the movie to a halt, a screeching halt for me every time they're on screen.
I will meet you somewhat in the middle and say that I don't think that they were as valuable in this movie as they were in the first one. I liked them in the first movie quite a bit. In this one, they don't have quite as much value. Although, the truth serum scene, which we will debate in
like,
a few moments.
Eye-rolling and painful.
Okay, we'll debate it. We'll debate it now then. Fine.
No, I don't. Like, here's the thing. I don't really – there's no need to debate it. Like, it is what it is.
All right. Well, so how do you feel about Lawrence Fishburne in his role here?
Wasted.
Okay.
Should have – all the screen time that was given to those fuckers should have been given to Lawrence Fishburne.
All right. Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Do you prefer calling him Lawrence Fishburne or Larry Fishburne?
Well, I'm not friendly with Mr. Fishburne, so I'm going to call him Lawrence. Now, however, I have it on good authority that his daughter, Montana Fishburne, has made some questionable choices in her life, and I would encourage you to go out there and look for those on the internet.
Nick's referring to pornography, people. Mm. I would not ever encourage anyone to do that without paying for it, of course.
Do you think the giant ant Antony is funny, Nick?
No.
No?
Okay. Oh, my Lord.
What's wrong with you?
Lots of things.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah. Nick, do you enjoy laughter and joy?
Only at the expense of others.
Day and night she talks, each word more useless than the next.
If this movie were endlessly bleak and just nothing but terrible people doing terrible things, that would probably be funny.
What about Woo? Do you at least like Woo?
I do like Woo. I'll give you that.
Yes, Woo is good.
And that's another thing. Like the daughter stuff is so good, and it's not in the movie enough.
I would agree. Mm, yeah.
Like she,
I could have used more of her.
This major aspect of this character, they kind of will pay lip service to it from time to time, but she hasn't really had an active role in either movie, which is so dumb. Because, like, here's my issue with both of these movies. You have one of the greatest comedic actors on the face of the planet in Paul Rudd, and it feels to me like you look for every opportunity to write scenes and jokes for people other than Paul Rudd, who aren't funny for the most part. My take.
I think
is your contention? Oh, go ahead.
I just think it's a fine line between like wanting to make him more than just, you know, the jokester guy and kind of give him a little bit of a serious mm-hmm. edge. But he also is funny in this, but it's just more of a low key mm-hmm. type humor. It's not meant to be belly laughs, you know, it's just meant to be.
Right. But then you could also, like, if you don't want to make him so funny, like I said, step up the daughter stuff, like bring in more of that, you know, and instead it's kind of off to the side, it feels like. And they're just, in both of these movies, I watch them and I see things and I'm like, more of that would make for a more interesting movie. And it just feels like in both of these movies, all the things that I'm interested in are the things that the filmmakers aren't particularly interested in. This is funny, though.
This is
fun. I love him getting stuck at kid size.
Yeah, this is good.
Now, Woo, who is a great character that we just talked about, I definitely hope to see more of him going forward. I actually agree that we could see more of the daughter. I think that would, you know, she's been so good and does have a tie to the comics, actually, and will play a significant role if they stick to that. And hopefully we'll see that at some point. But is your contention that Paul Rudd is too much of the straight man in these movies?
Yes.
And needs to be more of the goofball?
Well, not necessarily needs to be more of a goofball, but, like, to me, you could have him play it straight virtually the same amount of time, but then all those other times when you're looking for some great comedy, instead of writing stuff for Michael Pena, instead, maybe just send him off and be like, well, Luis went off and died in a fire somewhere. That would be good. Just have Paul Rudd do a comedy scene.
Fair enough, sir. Fair enough. I'm a big fan of all this stuff. This part's funny. What is this teacher doing, by the way? This teacher is putting no effort into his job.
Like most teachers.
Being your average teacher.
You're not allowed to say that.
Right.
No, I am. I am allowed to say that. It just makes my wife look better by comparison, you see.
Ah, yes. Very good. Very good. You know, hey, by the way, this is how old that I am now. Classrooms weren't like this when I was a kid. We didn't have these little squares to put stuff in. We just had
you
to drop them
cubby
in the
holes?
You didn't have cubbies?
No. We just had to drop our stuff in the corner. Then they whipped us, and it was whips and chains.
You had to walk there in the snow.
Yeah, it was terrible.
That's how great Mob Town is, of course.
Yes. No, I didn't go to elementary school in Mob Town, Nick. I went to elementary school in lovely, beautiful Venice, Florida, with a bunch of old people and garbage.
Not Venice Beach, California, that's for sure.
No, certainly not. No. No one was orange at my school. However, there were very...
The physical gag there is, like, really,
oh,
really
so
funny.
Good. Yeah, this is awesome. And complete with Michael Douglas is about to deliver a great
line. Yeah,
that's
great. Hiya, champ. How was school today?
You want a juice box? That's
so strange.
And then the line of, do you actually have that? Yeah, really good. And to a degree, Nick, I can see your point that it almost could lean heavier on the comedy at times, but I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about this movie was how much better it was in terms of the action. To me, the story is really good. The story, yeah, I have an emotional connection to this story.
Like, I'm not necessarily advocating for a larger percentage of the film to be comedy. I'm advocating for the larger percentage of the film to be good comedy and Paul Rudd comedy instead of these useless fuckers.
Jenny, your thoughts? You were saying something?
I was thinking that if there was one disappointment, it would be no sex scene with Hope and Scott.
Yeah, they don't.
That would answer a lot of questions as it relates to the shrinking and the embiggening powers and how they come into play.
They do not do the deed. They do imply off-screen doing of the deed at the beginning. When they said we were. Did I just say off-screen screwing of the deed? I think I may have said doing of the deed. That's good. Thank you. In any event, they referenced the fact that they were doing lots of things. Mm-hmm. End quote, and it probably wasn't even a direct quote, but we don't actually see it, so we don't really see them, get it on, so to speak, like that Veronica Vaughn. But what's she up to these days, by the way?
I don't know.
Anybody?
I got nothing. Sorry.
What was her name?
Her name was Veronica Vaughn.
No.
remember when you were at Billy Madison, you played Veronica Vaughn? That was awesome.
Bridget Wilson.
What's she doing now? Married to Pete Sampras, probably.
She is.
She is?
Yeah.
I thought I remembered that from somewhere, but then I was going to play it off. Like I was just throwing it out there, But I landed on one. Good.
Where'd it go?
Pete Sampras.
She is holding up well. I'll put it that way.
Well, of course, your husband's Pete Sampras.
It was also Sonya Blade. Let's not forget that.
Mm. She was Sonya Blade. You're right. And let's not forget that Christopher Lambert was Raiden.
That's true.
Lambert.
I kind of love that movie.
The first one's great.
Yeah.
The first one is a lot of fun. It's the best video game movie, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have to think about it, yeah, but probably. I'm trying to think of other video game movies. It would be my first thought, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there've only been a handful that were even not horrible, and it was good. I liked that movie.
Yeah, it's cheesy and fun, but that's kind of what you want from it.
It also has a maybe the worst sequel of all time.
Oh,
it's with Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Let's see here. God, I'm looking at the list of video game movies, and man, it's been a rough.
Yeah,
it's been a rough go.
What was that one that I hated that had the hot guy in it?
Double Dragon?
No.
Super Mario Brothers?
Oh, God damn it.
That Bob Hoskins.
One fine piece of ace. I speak from experience.
Assassin's Creed.
I haven't seen it, but
I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it.
I a lot of people hated it. I didn't. Well, I had never played the video game, so I didn't have any idea what the story was about, except that they were assassins, obviously.
There was some sort of creed.
That. But it was a little convoluted. I'll confess, but I actually kind of enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't love it, but
I have heard that the new Tomb Raider that just came out this past year was
all right.
I have not seen that yet.
The first Tomb Raider I liked, the one that the first Angelina Jolie one. But that may have had nothing to do with the movie, I confess. Probably. I was 17 at the time.
Who cares?
I was 17.
I liked the first Resident Evil before it got ridiculous.
I didn't even like that. I never liked any of the Resident Evil
movies. No, I hated this. I saw the second one. I never watched another one because I hated them so much after that.
I guess
shockingly, I didn't even like Doom, even though it had,
it had
God's gift to acting
it.
The Rock in it.
Yeah, it had the jabroni beating, pie eating, trailblazing, eyebrow raising, people's champ The Rock in it. And it sucked.
Like all of his movies.
Carl Urban was in it too, and he's really good.
I'm looking at the list of the other ones. I forgot that there was even a Prince of Persia movie, but now that I think about it, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never saw that either because I don't really care about the Prince of Persia. Isn't it kind of weird that a white guy was the Prince of Persia?
Absolutely. Need for Speed, part of which was filmed in Columbus, Georgia. That must mean
it was good, right?
Oh, it must have been terrible. Had Michael Keaton in it, though. And I don't actually like this actress, but she has one of my favorite names, Imogen Poots. Let's not forget about Imogen Poots.
It's both a name and an action.
Yeah, the fact that somebody named Imogen Poots is hot is very confusing.
What was that movie that had Nadia Bjorlin in it? That was like a racing movie. And
Warcraft, which I never saw, but Greg hates based on the trailers alone.
Oh God, the trailers for that Warcraft movie are the worst.
I don't have a strong feeling about the Warcraft
humankind has ever produced.
Oh man.
Why are we talking about other movies than the one that we're supposed to be watching?
Because I'm trying to distract.
He's trying to distract because he doesn't like it, even though it's good. You know, you're supposed. I'm going to make you watch it. You're going to say you love it, even if you don't.
I'll be honest. It's not terrible. Like, you know, it's fine. It's entertaining enough. Much like the first one.
There goes some more awesome age.
De-aging. Yeah, de-aging of Larry Fishburne.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you think that Marvel will ever like farm out their technology to
they
allow us
to
de-age ourselves?
Yes.
Because like even in Aquaman, which had really good special effects, I thought one of the worst special effects in the movie was the de-aging Willem Dafoe. I didn't think they did a very good job.
That's because they just should have taken his face from that short film, The Laughing Man or whatever, and superimposed it over him. That's what they should have done.
Hitman, I remember that movie. That was bad.
No, I knew it was going to be bad, so I didn't watch it. They have not done a Metal Gear Solid movie, have they?
No.
That might be good if they ever make one. Tekken was horrible. I watched that.
There'll be two more bites at the apple this year, with, of course, Pokemon Detective Pikachu coming out this year, and Sonic the Hedgehog in November of 2019.
I really like this scene here where Ghost is telling her little origin story.
That's what I was mentioning about the plot of this movie. In the first one, other than Scott and his daughter, I didn't have a strong emotional connection to the story they were telling. Mm. I liked the movie, and it was fun,
right?
But I didn't really care whether they beat the bad guy or not because I thought he was such a lame villain. In this one, they did a great job of making – I care about Scott. I care about his daughter. I care about Hope to a degree. I care about Hank, and he's funny and stuff like that. And I really care about Ghost. They make me care about her character in certainly a way I didn't about Yellowjacket, but really in a way that makes her a fully fleshed out character. And of course, you've got Walton Goggins' character, who is a two-dimensional, you know, mustache twirling bad guy. But that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
The movie needs to have a, you know, someone in the movie for you to have a rooting interest against. Because as it is right now, after you see her origin, it's kind of hard to root against Ghost, isn't it?
It is. And even though he's two-dimensional, it's very entertaining. And just his delivery.
Oh, he's always entertaining.
Yeah, so it's good.
I think my first exposure to him was on the show Justified, if anybody has ever watched that.
Yep.
He's great on that show. And I've seen him subsequently pop up as a bad guy in seemingly every project under the sun. And that's how we can tie in our non sequitur about video game movies. He had a role in the most recent Tomb Raider movie.
That's right. He was the bad guy in that movie.
Yeah, I saw him in the trailer.
And I'm assuming that he probably dies in the movie.
Well, I mean, no spoilers.
No spoilers. We don't spoil. We don't believe in spoiling things here at the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Mm-hmm. No.
As anyone who listens to our shows or our DC recaps knows. Mm-hmm. We believe in protecting the sanctity of the story.
Protecting the business.
That's exactly right. We want to let Robert Kirkman tell his stories the way he wants to tell them, the way he's planned them out, with a beginning, a middle, another middle, a third middle, a fourth middle, about 12 to 15 other middles, and then another
beginning. And then a really poor ending.
Or no ending at all.
Well, he's got a plan, you see.
There's always a plan.
Speaking of plans, what do you guys think about the plans of them to use the ants to help them out in this movie versus in the last movie? I really liked it, too. They don't bother re-explaining how it works to the audience. Mm-hmm. They assume that we will just accept it now because he's Ant-Man. Of course, he talks to ants. And it just works for me. They're funny. I would stop short of calling them cute. I would not call them that. But they're funny, and they're useful, and Scott's continuing to name them is always going to be one of those Paul Ruddian kind of you know, goofy. And is there anybody more adept or more appropriate to play the cheesy dad than Paul Rudd? I think it's an ideal role for him.
And his awkward flirting is great as well.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, another scene that I love in this movie is when, it's coming up soon actually, when Janet's spirit, if you will, inhabits the body of Scott. So funny. All physical. Mm-hmm. The physical humor of Paul Rudd in that scene is amazing. Even you, Nick, have to admit that was a good scene.
Yeah, Nick.
No comment.
You didn't like that scene. My God. What's your problem with it?
I didn't laugh during it.
Well, what can you say?
What do you want me to say?
The man that laughed during Schindler's List didn't laugh during... No, I'm just kidding. He didn't laugh.
Jesus!
He didn't laugh during Schindler's List. That was a joke at his expense. I'm sorry, Nick. That was too far.
I will say I did laugh at the very end whenever he comes back and like he looks down and he's holding his hand and like Paul Rudd's kind of like, what the hell's going on? You know, that was funny. But the whole like 90 seconds to 2 minutes before that, no, not funny to me.
If I were directing it, I would have had Paul Rudd come back and look at the hand on the hand and be like, huh? And then I would have cut back to Michael Douglas's face and he would have been making the,
He would have lifted his other hand up and made like a fake vagina with his, you know, like flicked his tongue back and forth in there, you know?
What are you talking about?
You know what I mean? You take your pointer finger and your middle finger and you kind of, you know what I mean? Kind of bend the tips backwards. It makes a little like vagina type shit.
Why did you turn into Jay Leno while you were explaining that?
I always fucking have a child here because you don't know anything about anything. You've never made a vagina with
you take the index finger, the pointer finger, and the same fingers, and you take the middle finger too, and you scrap
it. You know what I'm talking about? I'm trying to describe it to you from the other side of the L-shaped studios because we can't see each other because the studio is L-shaped, you see? And I'm trying to tell you how to make. And right now, I can see you. You're over there making the vagina with your fingers.
Well, you know, I think Kevin Eubanks here for doing this for 8 Men in the Wild. I guess you didn't see this is Friday.
I love that my Jay Leno impression is just a squeaky voiced girl from kindergarten or something. I don't even know.
Oh,
whatever.
God.
There's your boy David Dalsmachian.
Fuck's sake.
Oh, it's the truth serum scene, which, okay, I like this scene. Nick hates this scene. What are your thoughts on this scene, Jenny?
I like it. You know, it's not, like, the most funny thing I've ever seen, but it's...
No.
It's different.
It's quirky, not Austin. Weird. It's not Austin Powers in the hot tub with a lot of vagina, but it's pretty funny.
Not everything has to be like the height of comedy to like get a chuckle out of me, you know what I mean?
No. But yet, if you took that same scene and all of them were having their arms ripped off and in pain and torture and agony, Nick would love it. Mm. He likes his heroes to suffer. Right, Nick?
For the most part.
Suffer what's like an exception? Ghost is suffering.
What, yes, what is now, suffering. Greg?
What's the exception, Nick?
Oh, the exception is when they're in high
school. Boring ass high school Spider-Man.
Yeah, when they're in high school, they're great. Then it's funny.
Anyway, yes, that's what I was. That's what I figured. I would expect as much. But yeah, you're right, Jenny. Ghost is suffering here in a way. Mr. Fishburne's character, Bill, is suffering here. Now, here's another thing. Bill Foster. Did you know anything about this character, Jenny?
No.
In advance of this movie? Mm-mm. Neither did I. I knew of him only through Civil War, which we read for the...
Civil War, where he gets a literal hole blown through the middle of him.
Damn. So, Nick, you're more of a Marvelologist than I am. Let me rephrase that. You're more of a Marvel... You know what I'm saying. You're a guy that knows about Marvel more than I do. And so tell me about Bill Foster. What do you know about him?
He was the original Goliath in the comics. Notable for multiple reasons, mainly being one of the predominant, the first predominantly African-American superheroes. So an affiliate member of the Avengers, based on my understanding. We, of course, have to consult the experts, Tim Capel and Todd Weber, for a full rundown of his Avengers affiliation. But notable for that respect, having kind of filling in the role for Giant Man whenever Giant Man wasn't a member of the Avengers. And again, notable for getting a literal circular hole blown through the middle of him in Civil War by the Clone Thor.
Sounds like he used circular logic. Now, here's the wig that we just saw on Luis. Mm-hmm. How does that compare to the wig worn by future Renee on Arrow?
There is no comparison. No wig that has ever existed can compare to that wig that future Renee wears.
Now, wait a minute. What about Stephen Amell's long hair wig from the early seasons of Arrow on the island?
That is a much better wig than future Renee's wig. Future Renee's wig is honestly one of the worst wigs I've ever seen in a Hollywood show.
How would you compare it to Kurt Angle's wig that he wore after he lost his hair in 2002?
Worse? At least Kurt Angle's wig was intentionally funny as opposed to unintentionally True. Funny.
And he wore earmuffs around it too, if you recall.
Well, no, it was a wrestling headgear, you know, a headpiece.
Yeah, but you still call them earmuffs. Anyway.
This scene feels like it has gone on for 10 minutes.
That's because it's gone on for, 4 minutes probably.
God almighty.
What if somebody pumped you full of truth serum, Nick? Would that be any different from
normal?
Your normal take?
Take on what?
Anything.
Life?
Yeah.
On anything?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, if they did, I'd probably, you know, I'd probably have had more troubles at home recently than I needed today.
You know, how did you guys watch this movie? Because, you know, a lot of people watched it maybe sitting in the theater. Some people maybe watched it laying on the couch. And some people might have watched it while squatting.
Mm. Yep.
I'm sure some people have. They're probably, you know, using up my internet, paying my Netflix that I'm paying for, watching it right now for all I know.
Eating your food and throwing parties, quite frankly.
This is all hypothetical, of course.
Yeah, hypothetically.
Hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetically
speaking, if I had the Infinity Gauntlet.
What would Tony Schiavone say? Hypothetically, you can go fuck yourself.
Without question.
Well, one thing that's not hypothetical is the fact that we've pretty well gone on about everything here. Michael, Doug, we haven't talked about the cast. We have to run down the cast here. Paul Rudd, we've been over. We've been over Woo. We've been over the daughter. Michael Douglas is Hank here. How do we like him in this movie compared to the first movie?
He's good.
He's good. There's less of him, and he's more serious, I think.
Yeah, he doesn't have quite as many, other than that exchange in the van, there's not as many lines, per se. I mean, one-liners from him that he had in the first one.
But he and Hope are like the driving force of the plot, basically. Mm-hmm. Them. I mean, they're the most serious parts of the movie, because they have to be.
Oh, yeah, because they have all the emotional stakes. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Scott wants to help and everything, but if this lady dies, it's not like Scott is going to be real broke up about it. He doesn't need
fucking met the lady. Like, he's looking at it like you know, we've talked about, you should look at Aunt May, that, you know, if they rescue her, great, but if they don't, she's really been dead for many years anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Michael Douglas is good. Yeah, I maintain that a more interesting series of Ant-Man films is probably the period piece told about the 60s Ant-Man, but that's an unpopular opinion, I'll acknowledge.
Yes, I disagree with it. But nonetheless, I acknowledge your ability to have that opinion.
Yep.
And can understand it based on your tastes and everything. I get it. I agree. Michael Douglas is good in this movie. I also agree that he's not utilized for the comedic purposes as much here, but he is, like you mentioned, Jenny, the driving force emotionally of the film in many ways. Now, Michelle Pfeiffer as Janet, what do we make of her in this movie?
Not in it enough. Again,
agree.
Like, you know.
We don't get much of a reason to invest in her. I'm going to make a somewhat controversial comment. I've already mentioned I really like this movie a lot. I don't particularly like what we've seen to this point of Janet. And this is entirely because I acknowledge I have no knowledge, I have no experience with these characters except through the animated series, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And on that series, Janet is such a spitfire of a personality. And I've mentioned this to you before, Nick, when we reviewed that show many years ago, that she was surprisingly one of my favorite characters on that entire show. I love her on there. And so far, what we got out of Michelle Pfeiffer's take on Janet is a very, to me, kind of a little bit of a boring character, I'll be honest. A little bit of one-dimensional character.
She doesn't appear at all in the first movie. Not directly, anyway. Like, you see her in the suit, but you don't see Michelle Pfeiffer. You don't see any of Janet Van Dyne. In this movie,
she's just there to be rescued.
She's in what? The very beginning in the flashback scene, and then at the very end. So, like, any version of her that you would try to create in this movie, you're not going to have enough time and real estate to really introduce and get people to invest in. So, yeah, I mean, this is another area where I watch this movie and I go, there are five or six things I would have much rather seen that instead
but
of
how could they have involved her more? How could they have shown her more if the end of the movie is them rescuing her?
Well, you could have easily had one of the characters have to go in the quantum realm for a longer period of time to try and find her. Like, you could have had, you know, I think at the end of the movie here you have Michael Douglas and it lasts about 5 minutes or so. What if you had, like, one of the subplots of the movie be one of these three characters in the quantum realm almost on like an expedition to try and find her while communicating back and forth between the other two characters that are running around on Earth doing stuff?
I can see that. A little bit of an inner space kind of deal.
Yep.
But yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But I will say it doesn't bother me much because I think there's plenty of room to expand in a third movie on her character and on Hank's character and how they interact with one another.
I feel like she's a little bit too normal when she comes out of the quantum realm. Like, you would think there would be, like, tons of, like, trauma and, like, you know, but she seems
she's
to
been
just
gone
be her normal
for, what,
self.
30 years?
Right.
Yeah, she's been gone for, you know, a long time.
Maybe time is different there, but then again, it doesn't really seem that way, so...
Yeah, she aged normally, so...
Right.
I agree. If anything, you should feel longer to her. I actually agree with that as well. That was one thing that I noticed on this watch that I didn't notice watching the theater.
I was halfway expecting her to turn heel when she came out. Like,
like
driven crazy by the experience or whatever, and then have to, like, deal with her as she, you know, was trying to figure out herself.
You mean you haven't watched the deleted scenes then?
I haven't, no.
One of the deleted scenes, she actually grabs a steel folding chair that's handed to her by Walton Goggins, and she beats Hank over the back and head with this chair approximately 15 times, with the edge of the chair especially, and then covers him, and then gets a pop for the win.
Wow. Why did they delete that?
I don't know. It was a scene they filmed at the Houston Astrodome before it was destroyed years ago. Nick, were you aware of that?
Hmm?
You weren't aware of that scene?
I was not.
Oh, it was pretty good.
Well, maybe we'll see more of that in the third one if we get a third one.
I believe we will get a third one. Yeah. And I think we're going to see more of this little girl here. And I think we're going to see, by that point, I'm assuming that the new cop boyfriend of his ex or husband of his ex, by then they're going to be in a full-on, you know, physical relationship.
Right, yeah.
The three of them.
A triad, if you will.
Yes. I guess it would be quadrangle now with the inclusion of Hope.
Add Hope in there. Well, I won't be writing fan fiction about that at all.
No, I want to write a Woo fan fiction.
Woo.
Where he's about to have sex with someone, but he stops to explain to them the process in very cold technical terms.
It should be a buddy cop team up between Woo and Little Richard.
Woo! Ric Flair can join in halfway through. Yeah,
Ric Flair, Charlotte Flair. There you go.
He said your name was Woo. You know, this is only the third best orgasm I've ever had. I've always said that. I've always said the best orgasm ever given to me was by Wahoo. He chopped my genitals, 1978. Best feeling in the world. So, Walton Goggins attempting to play both sides of the fence here, using the FBI to do his dirty work, and it sets off the big climactic action scene of the film. I really love this. I thought the entire movie was building up to this.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in these comic book movies, I felt this about Black Panther, as great as the action can be in the middle of the movie, a lot of times they don't deliver on the big climactic fight scene. Even a movie as great as Winter Soldier, which I love, the last fight scene is like maybe the third or fourth best action scene of the movie. In this one, I really truly think they did a great job of building to the best action scene in the movie, which is this chase sequence that goes all over the city and concludes, you know, on the docks with Giant Man collapsing into the ocean and everything. I thought this whole sequence was really, really good.
Yeah, I like the sequence as well. I actually, it doesn't go on as long, and so I can see why you probably enjoy this closing sequence a little bit more, but I actually think the hotel/kitchen action sequence is probably my favorite action sequence in the film, but it's,
oh, it's
I like
great.
This one.
Yeah, that one, yeah, that one was great too, but I thought this was built to and delivered in the main event role. You know, you have your opening spot fest, your cool down segments, and then the main event delivers. And in a major way. This was like watching fucking Kenny Omega go out there to Tanahashi. Expose the fucking business. Going big and small. I don't know if that was JR or Cornette. I don't know what I was doing there. Anyway, we've pretty well gone over everything here. Let's summarize our thoughts on this excellent or bad, depending on your perspective, film. And
no one has suggested that it is bad, for the record.
No one in the world?
I have not. No one on this podcast has.
Fair enough. So, overall thoughts, Nick?
It's all right.
Fuck.
Andrew Garner.
Thanks, Garner.
It's all right. Jenny, your thoughts on this film?
I love it. You know, I think it's a good step up from the original, which you can't say. I say the original. I mean the first Ant-Man movie. Mm-hmm. You can't say that a lot about a lot of movies. So that's good. And it's just a quality installment in the MCU, and you know, if you can handle the lightness and the comedy instead of the darkness.
So let's continue making your salient points, Jenny, while I find my rankings as well.
Oh, my salient points. I don't have any of those. I just have some rambling thoughts. And this is my wrestling notebook, so it's not really going to tell me any thoughts I have about the MCU.
Wait, stop. Your wrestling notebook?
Yes, my wrestling notebook. Because
you use your wrestling notebook?
I watch wrestling, and I write notes in it.
You write notes in it? Yeah. Is there a spreadsheet anywhere in your wrestling notebook?
No, I'm not very much of a spreadsheet kind of girl. I like to handwrite notes, and most of my handwritten wrestling notes will be like, that sucked, or that was awesome, or 4 stars. So
yeah, that's
here we go.
I was waiting to tell you to get the fuck out if you were keeping detailed star ratings of everything you watch. But you know,
no. Remember when we did that SummerSlam project that we were supposed to be doing that, and then we just stopped doing it?
Yeah.
Nobody did it.
Hey, there has never been a Place to Be Nation project in history that has ever started and not concluded. Not a single one. So don't feel bad.
Hey, now, speaking of projects starting and not being finished, but in this case, picking up the pieces of another,
right.
You can use your wrestling notes on Hawk and WCW, WCW retrospective podcast starring yourself, myself, and Tim Cable.
Tim Cable's self. And you know, I heard there was rumors that he was going to go to All Elite, though. So, yeah, you never know if he's going to hang around.
You know, they're buying up everybody right now.
They are.
The Shady Khan brothers are not brothers. The Shady Khan people. Mustache and his son are buying up all our talent.
Why does he got to be shady, Greg?
I don't know that he's shady. That's a good point. I don't know the man. If he wants to, I heard on JR's podcast they're a great family with great connections and they're doing good things in this business. Not that he has any connection to it, but he's just saying that independently thinking, they're great for the business. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, if AEW wants to send me a paycheck or wants to sponsor maybe, but a sponsorship on the Hard Trail and Fanboys,
absolutely.
Nick, I'd be all for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about how great the Jacksonville Jaguars are. You know, we'll do whatever they want.
Absolutely. Hell yeah, I'll be wearing those colors every week. They send me the money. You know, we'll talk about the, Pac and all those people. It'll be good. Now, Pac.
Oh, yeah, Pac. Neville. Yeah, Neville. That's his name. Formerly known as.
So that's all good stuff. Tim's going to be there. It's going to be great. But the rankings. I found my list of rankings.
Oh, good. I have not.
Are you rattling papers in the background, Greg?
No, that's me.
Okay, I was about to say. Greg, I was like, Greg, you know we keep an electronic copy, right?
you keep a spreadsheet, do you?
Why don't you kick us off by reading the critical rankings of the Marvel movies post Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Sure. Give me one moment.
Sure, absolutely. Sure. You know, one of the things about Bill Foster is that his name is Bill Foster, and he sounds like he could be...
Now I'm ready. All right, you guys know how this works. It's a combination of the Rotten Tomatoes score, the Metacritic score, the IMDb score. Here we go, from 20 all the way to number 1. At number 20, Thor: The Dark World. At number 19, The Incredible Hulk. At number 18, Iron Man 2. At 17, Thor. At 16, Iron Man 3. In a tie for 14th, Avengers: Age of Ultron and Captain America: The First Avenger. At 13, Ant-Man. At 12, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. At 11, Ant-Man and the Wasp, clocking in at number 11, which means the top 10 to this point are: at number 10, Doctor Strange. At number 9, Captain America: The Winter Soldier. At number 8, tied for 8th, I should say, is Captain America: The Winter Soldier and Avengers: Infinity War in a tie for 8th. At 7, Spider-Man Homecoming. At 6, The Avengers. At 5, Captain America Civil War. At 4, Thor Ragnarok. At 3, Guardians of the Galaxy. At 2, Iron Man. And at number 1, Black Panther.
Outstanding, Nick. Now, why don't you give us your rankings?
Oh, for God's sake. All right. My rankings. I'll go from 20 to 1 as we do. At number 20, Ant-Man. At number 19, Ant-Man and the Wasp. At number 18, Iron Man 3. At 17, The Incredible Hulk. At 16, Thor: The Dark World. At 15, Doctor Strange. Iron Man 2. At 14, Thor Ragnarok. At 13, Captain America: The First Avenger. At 12, Thor at 11, Black Panther at 10, Iron Man at 9, Avengers: Infinity War at 8, Guardians of the Galaxy at 7, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 at 6, Spider-Man Homecoming at 5, The Avengers at 4, Avengers: Age of Ultron at 3, Captain America: Civil War at 2, and still at number 1, Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Now for a more accurate list. As I, for one, can't imagine anyone enjoying Doctor Strange more than Ant-Man, but... Therein lies the difference.
It's not just my opinion, Greg. The critics back me up on this one.
All right. I have that.
Oh, no response to that.
I just lost my sheet. Where is it? There it is. At number 20, I have Doctor Strange. At number 19, I have The Incredible Hulk. At number 18, I have Thor: The Dark World. At number 17, I have Thor. At number 16, I have Captain America: The First Avenger. At number 15, I have Scott Antman. At number 14, I have Spider-Man Homecoming. At number 13, I have Scott Antman and Hope Wasp Woman. At what number am I on?
12, I think.
12, I have Iron Man. 10, I have Iron Man 3. 9, I have Iron Man 2. 8, I have Avengers Age of Ultron. 7, I have Black Panther. 6, I have Guardians of the Galaxy. 5, I have The Avengers. 4, I have Thor Ragnarok. I have messed up my count at some point. It's become painfully obvious to me that I have messed up my count and skipped a movie somewhere. At 5, I have Thor Ragnarok. At 4, I have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. At 4, I have Captain America the Winter Soldier. At 3, I have Captain America the Winter Soldier Volume 2. At 2, I have Avengers Infinity War. And at 1, I have Captain America Civil War. I hope that was clear to everyone.
It was not at all, but good for you.
All right.
Okay, I'll read them in order now, just to be clear.
His much more accurate list that has like four number fours, a couple of different number 13s, throws a couple of number 22s in there, just for good measure. And there's only been 20 movies.
Avengers: Infinity War, Captain America: The Winter Soldier, Guardians Volume 2, Thor: Ragnarok, The Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Panther, Avengers: Age of Ultron, Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, Iron Man, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Spider-Man: Homecoming, Ant-Man, Captain America: The First Avenger, Thor, Thor the Dark World, The Incredible Hulk, and Doctor Strange.
All right.
How many number fours again, Greg?
I was messed up by you moving the damn cursor around.
You sound like Tim Capel making an order at Sonic. I'll take 3 number fours, a couple of number sevens.
He loves you for that.
I wouldn't say it if I didn't have a great affection in my heart for that man.
Agreed.
That's not true, Nick. You'd say it anyway.
Not publicly. I would just talk. If I didn't have great affection for him, I would talk shit about him privately.
Of course.
Perhaps.
Like we all
perhaps
do.
Perhaps in a secret Facebook chat.
Oh, that's good. Denny? Let's hear your rankings.
All right. Well, I don't remember my past rankings at all. My notebooks have failed me. At number 20, I have The Incredible Hulk. Number 19 is Thor the Dark World. Number 18 is Captain America the First Avenger. Number 17, Doctor Strange. Number 16, Thor. Number 15, Ant-Man. Number 14, Ant-Man and Wasp Woman. 13, Guardians Volume 2. 12, Iron Man 2. 11, Iron Man 3, 10, Age of Ultron, 9, Spider-Man Homecoming, 8, Black Panther, 7, Thor Ragnarok, 6, Iron Man, 5, Guardians of the Galaxy, 4, Avengers, 3, Winter Soldier, 2, Civil War, and 1, Infinity War.
Excellent. Love it.
Decent list. It's better than Greg's, that's for sure.
Well, thanks.
Oh, good. It's obvious. Obviously better than Nick's and his Doctor Strange loving ass.
Obviously.
I have Doctor Strange in like near the bottom. What do you want from me?
I don't want to hear it.
I don't want it to be right through everything. The way you do. By the way, remember, again, the critics have it as a top 10 MCU movie, an upper half.
You know what else the critics loved?
What?
You didn't really have it. You didn't have a closing to that line. You were just going to pick something out of the top of your head, pull something out of your ass. You had nothing in mind when you set up that line.
Daniel Day-Lewis is my left foot, is what critics love.
They also love The Dark Knight.
Yeah, well, they also love There Will Be Blood starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Are you just going to name Daniel Day-Lewis movies?
Pretty much. I'm going to run out pretty soon, though. All I got left in my quiver is Last of the Mohicans.
Gangs of New York.
Yeah, there you go.
Was that one he did just recently that he was like a...
Lincoln?
Wasn't he Lincoln?
He played Lincoln?
He played Lincoln. What about the other Paul Thomas Anderson movie he was in recently?
God.
About, he was a cult leader or some shit.
We'll have to ask our buddy Andrew Reich.
Yeah, I was about to say, ask Andrew Reich. The Master, I think it was called, something like that.
The Master of Powerbomb.
Point being, why is Doctor Strange always the one that you just jump to? Doctor Strange, right. Oh, God.
Because, okay, with the sliding scale of Marvel movies, understandable. It's still a baseline. It's good. But I think it is by far the worst of the movies. To me. Everybody's different, but gosh almighty, very little rewatchability.
Worse than Hulk?
To me, yeah. Because I like Edward Norton in the Hulk a lot.
I do too.
Yeah, and if you, like, Hulk, the closing action sequence is, like, really video gamey, but there is a certain, like, cheesy, over-the-top quality to it that is enjoyable. Just for how freaking long it goes on. Like, it is, like, it is the damn Balboa Drago.
It does feel like it's half the movie, to be honest. Now that I think back on it. It feels like half the movie is Edward Norton wandering the world, and then the second half of the movie is the Hulk fighting the Abomination.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, you know? It wasn't like the acting and the plot in that movie were blow away. So here's a big dumb action sequence to close everything.
But I will say, Edward Norton is really good in that movie.
Yes,
I maintain that.
I just actually rewatched that like last week because I'm trying to watch all the movies again before Endgame, and I don't know if I'll get there or not. But
Highlander Endgame.
Oh, what other Endgame could there be, Greg? Now see, that'll be the big twist ending is when Christopher Lambert shows up and, like, just kills Thanos with a sword. That'll be awesome.
Is this the most times that Christopher Lambert has been mentioned on a podcast?
Yes.
Sometime?
If it is, that's a crime because he's freaking Christopher Lambert.
He is a French treasure.
I don't know what ethnicity he is. He belongs to all people equally.
Here's the problem with Highlander Endgame, by the way. They killed wrong kid died. You want to talk about wrong kid dying? Yeah. They built that whole movie about Highlander Endgame. It's gonna be what is it? A Connor McCloud and Duncan McCloud finally meeting.
From
and
the stupid TV show that nobody cares about.
Nobody cares about that shit. And then he ends up surviving, and Connor gets killed even, and because he's Scottish, get it killed anyway. Maybe that didn't work, but nonetheless, he gets.
Yeah, Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery are Scottish.
Now, remember,
Sean Connery is Spanish.
Spanish in the movie.
Christopher Lambert is Scottish.
Yes.
I am the man of La Mancha.
Now,
one thing. Speaking of, wrong kid died. We didn't actually talk about the post credit scene.
Also, how much would that suck if, you know, Janet, she comes back finally out of the quantum realm, and then she gets snapped. I mean, that's just fucked up, man.
Yeah, it is
but
fucked
what
up.
Would be even Which better is if she came back to the real world, and all of her loved ones were killed.
So if she came back after the snapping.
Yeah.
When she comes back, she's just reunited with them.
Yeah.
And they just turn to dust instantly.
Oh, Jesus.
Me personally, I hope we get to find out in Endgame that all of Scott's friends were turned to dust and that somebody pissed on the pile of dust after it was over.
Now, who would be pissing on the pile of dust? They have not introduced
Captain America.
I'm trying to think of
that'll
who would be
the, that'll be it. The Disney version of Deadpool, Nick.
We'll get dust.
Yes, we'll get Dean Ambrose Deadpool where he urinates and throws mustard on things.
I hope the gimmick is that everybody has to make a sacrifice to bring somebody back. And they get to Scott, and he's like, all right, Scott, what sacrifice are you going to make to bring Luis back? And he's like, you know what? I'm good. I'm just going to leave him where he is.
Oh, come on. Now, what would be fair is if they sacrifice old Aunt May, which should have been done in the 60s, because she was drawn, again, to be 115 years old. I'm not saying I want this Aunt May gone. You know,
no,
understand.
God, no.
I'm just saying if it were still old woman Aunt May, just let her go on. Natural causes. Anyway, Highlander Endgame could have been a great. Edge is in that movie, by the way. A young horse-toothed Edge is in Highlander Endgame. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the Highlander series. We'll get Jenny on for that again at some point.
Yes, please.
And anyway,
I don't know that we'll do the Highlander series on Hard Traveling Fanboys, but perhaps on. Something else, I don't know.
Something.
That's what we all need in our lives, Greg, is another fucking podcast. Let's just create another one of those.
We'll have to become someone else.
I was about to say, it could be on the oft-talked-about-but-never-actually-done Potting Iron.
Potting Iron,
there's no Arnold connection there. And Potting Iron is a limited series.
Although, if you could have Sean Connery playing a Spanish guy, they could have had Arnold playing like a French guy or something.
Oh, that would have been awesome. Yeah, that would have been great.
I don't know why I'm doing Dolph Lundgren there, but anyway, he could be, you know, be like, "Hello, I am Le Bossu. I represent the Club of Villains. What are you doing?"
I am Googling Highlander in-game Edge. I don't see anything about. Oh,
he's in it.
There he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Look at him.
I wish. don't just look at it. Touch it. Yeah.
You know, I
now look
I,
away
I,
from it.
I said
look
that
back at it again. Do it again, whore.
I was sitting there at the dinner table the other day, and it's one of those things where I always have to, like, you know, fight with my kids to get them to eat. And I actually said to one of them, "Don't just look at it, eat it." And I just got up and walked away from the table, realizing what I just said.
Say, Potter, do you like Genesis? Yeah. I myself prefer when Phil Collins took over. Yeah. Just to reimagine that entire scene with
James Greg, Stewart. Do you like Pearl Jam?
You know, that was one thing we didn't mention, Nick, about that Super Bowl. I did agree with your assessment that there was no breeze to be found anywhere in the temperature.
Oh my God, yeah. And, you know, let's all cry and moan and bitch about it and not, you know, be able to handle people talking about it, so we get pissy and leave a group chat because small, infantile baby men.
Hey, let's not judge too harshly that I'm leaving group chats. Come on. There's a lot to be said for that. But the overarching point here is we are happy that Jennifer joined us for this show.
Absolutely.
To talk to us about Scott Antman and Janet Waspwoman. Jenny, tell us where people
Waspwoman.
Can find you.
Hope Waspwoman.
Janet Waspwoman, Hope Waspwoman, they're of the same lineage.
They are.
Of the, yes. Of course, they are of the op. They are of the op Waspwoman. Jenny, how can folks find you on social media and on podcast?
You can find me at Jenny Waspwoman on Twitter. I'm at Jenny Cruz 2814 on the Twitter machine. I have like 800 podcasts, so you can try like Geek and Sassy. We just dropped a new episode today called Netflix and Chill. You can try Talk and Pop. You can try me on Freak Out Drive-In, Talking WCW, which is over on the Place V Nation Wrestling Feed.
Wrestling Feed, thank you, because I think I misspoke earlier. Yes, it is on the Wrestling Feed.
What else? We're going to do an Oscars preview pod in a couple of weeks. I think I'm on Andy Atherton's The Great Debate next week. So, I mean, it's just too much, you know. Too much of my jawing on these shows. But there it is.
Well, what was I going to say? There was a point that I had here to bring up a moment ago, and I lost it in the midst of being distracted by this scene.
Is it that I have no life and no job?
No.
And I just do podcasts all the time?
No, that wasn't what I was going to say.
Okay.
What was it? Something about, nothing about the quantum realm. Clearly.
The what about now?
The microverse. And that place where them little old fellas go. Some folks calls it a quantum realm. I calls it a microverse.
Well, Greg and I, of course, are well-versed in the ways of the microverse.
Hey, it's a condition that affects more men than you realize.
More men than you realize.
How about some of that blue chew? I hear that helps with the microverse.
Yeah, blue chew.
No. See, the blue chew, blue chew is a great product. Don't get me wrong.
Blue chew is an amazing product. Blue chew, which you can order right now.
Absolutely, but it hasn't corrected the microverse. I mean, that just
no?
Helps the microverse to perform at its peak potential.
Ah. Well, you know what would help the microverse, or at least allow the microverse with the blue chew help to perform an even better ability than it currently has, would be to lay on a nice, firm Casper mattress.
And then take a Rick Rude dick injection.
A what now?
Never mind.
There's an urban legend that involves professional wrestler Rick Rude that alleges that he passed away due to attempts, failed attempts to inject his penis with some sort of a Viagra-like substance with a needle. It caused a blood clot of some kind. I don't know if this is true. I'm assuming it's not. But this is an urban legend in wrestling, Nick. Did I have it mostly right there?
That's mostly right, yeah. I had always heard an infection, not a blood clot.
Infection. God, can you imagine a blood clot in your penis? Ugh. You know, even injecting something? I don't know. But nonetheless, who knows if it's true or not?
What about those people who get tattoos on their dick? Like, what would that be like?
Oh, you Lord. Know? I wouldn't want somebody to look at it. I have to do a little plug for a non-Place to Be Nation podcast. I listened to Conan O'Brien's podcast with Dana Carvey, and he did a bit, Dana Carvey did, of Jimmy Stewart being orally pleasured by Katharine Hepburn.
Holy shit.
And it was so good. Ah, I like that. Oh, Jimmy, will you ejaculate already? I've got places to go. I'll ejaculate when I want to. Yeah. Oh, God, no. Oh, it's so good. Hello, Bailey. This is Potter. Oh, he was great, too. No one does Potter impressions anymore. Probably because that movie came out in 1942. But all that being said, we've had a great and raucous time here. We hope you all enjoyed it and that we offended as few of you as possible.
No, we don't.
We will be back. We will be back next week. Actually, right after this break. Not next week. We'll be back after this break. This is the first part of the show.
It says the first half of the show, yes.
We'll be back in just a few minutes with all the rest of this excellent stuff that you have. The reading, the watching, the rundown, etc.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. And in addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB in Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome once again to the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Nick. What's it like for this to be the very first attempt at us to come back from the break?
Good. You know, we always nail our comebacks very well. We have the best comebacks in the business, as they say. So,
absolutely. You know, we learned them from our work in Mid-South, working for Watts.
Mm-hmm.
And also our time feuding with Abdullah the Butcher, legend wrestler.
That's true. Abdullah the Butcher was a legend wrestler. And, of course, you know, Abdullah, he beat Killer Khan, Bruiser Brody, Stan Hansen. So that's impressive as well.
That's incredible, beating Stan Hansen like that. I mean, that's really impressive. So yeah, you know, we really know how to blow a comeback, kid, and we really do that well. And especially what's great about this is we sound so fresh and full of energy, Nick, because this is, of course, the second half of our show.
Absolutely.
So we still have all that energy from the first half of the show.
Yes, that's accurate.
That's outstanding, as far as anyone knows. And why don't we just get right around to it here, to delving into our weekly look at what we've been reading and watching in the comic book world. It's a segment that I like to call, I believe I coined this one, Reading and Watching. So, Nick, what you been reading?
Nothing.
Yeah, me too. I haven't read anything either. I read Shazam last week. I got nothing this week. So,
you know, normally, Greg, I would say now that football season is officially over with the Super Bowl having passed, that I would have more time for reading. But that's not the case this year, because I don't know about you, but I am excited for some Alliance of American... No, none of that. None of that. Some Alliance of American football that's getting started this upcoming weekend on the CBS.
You know, ever since Stone Cold Steve Austin joined the Alliance, I've been a big fan of the Alliance of American football. I mean, think about all the great seasons that the Alliance has put together to this point, and I think this could be the best one yet.
I think so as well. Very excited. On the edge of my seat, really. See who takes home the championship.
The Birmingham Iron are going to take it home.
Let's not, you know, we'll see.
So that it's going to be tough for us to catch up then, because now we've got year-round football. I mean, gosh, goodness. And then WrestleMania season's upon us almost. The road to WrestleMania certainly is being paved at the moment. So you know, that's happening. So, yeah, we've just got a lot of distractions in the way. But one thing that we're not distracted from, for the most part, except for Black Lightning, which we're still behind on, is watching our weekly CW shows. So let's get to those, shall we?
We shall. Yeah, let's do that.
Green Arrow is not the name of the show. I don't know why I said that. Arrow on CW kicked us off on Monday. There was no Supergirl because of our watch cycle due to the Super Bowl. But last week's Arrow picked us up on what was left on a cliffhanger. And if you remember, Nick, the mid-season finale for Arrow introduced us to Emiko Queen. Mm-hmm. And this was supposed to be our big chance to see a confrontation between Oliver and Emiko about the...
That's going to be the hardest thing to force ourselves to do.
Yes. Well, there's two hard things related to this, and I'll get to that. But they leave us on a cliffhanger of Ollie and Emiko, his long-lost sister, kind of confronting each other at their father's grave. And Oliver's like, hey, you know, I know what happened. I know your story. I want to talk to you. And rather than pick up from that cliffhanger, it's kind of glossed over. They do have a brief one-sided conversation and Emiko leaves. But for the most part, that's not where the episode starts. The episode starts with Oliver and Laurel Lance doing a kind of a press conference kind of deal on TV, talking with a G. Gordon Godfrey type figure about his status in the city.
You're making me wish it would have been G. Gordon Godfrey, played of course by Tim Curry, the way he is on Young Justice.
Oh, that would have been awesome. That really would have been awesome. What a great character. And we really kind of get glossed over the Emiko thing there, but the point is Oliver and Laurel attempting to instill faith in the people that Oliver working with the Star City Police Department is a good thing. certain figures in the city are trying to rebelling against this concept of Oliver Queen working with the police department, including someone from Oliver's past who blames the vigilantes for his father's – actually blames Oliver directly for his father's death because he's learned that Robert Queen murdered his dad, who was Oliver's bodyguard Robert's bodyguard back on the boat way back in the pilot episode. The dude that unfortunately gets shot had a family. Go figure. So that plot's playing out. But the majority of this episode, it felt like, to me anyway, revolved around – Diggle and Curtis and how they are dealing with this new Suicide Squad featuring Ricardo Diaz. There's a notable sequence in this episode that I have to admit, Nick, got my hopes up far too much.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, I'm being. This is a show where we like to lay it out all on the line.
Yeah, we like to have a take and come strong, the way that Jim Rome used to say.
That's right. That's right. What did he call his fans? I forgot.
Hell if I know. Idiots.
I don't know.
Rubes, marks. I don't know.
Takesman. My take on Curtis has been well known for a while now. I have no time for his character. I'm so done. I talked last week about how much great work has been done with the character of Renee Wild Dog, who I was against at first. I feel like Curtis has had the least positive work done with him of any of the supporting characters on Arrow. They write him to be so ineffectual at what he does, so annoying in his kind of like Diet Felicity role. Mm-hmm. That I really wish he would just leave the show, and he would fit in so much better on something like Legends, particularly with a more revamped character with more substance to him. But here they tease me with his death, and I knew it wasn't going to stick. I knew it in my heart of hearts, but damn if I didn't get my hopes up briefly. And I was like, yes, he did a stupid thing, but yes. So, but no, of course, it was an elaborate ruse, and one that works to their benefit. But I have to say, all that stuff was good. All the stuff with Diaz, he's always good. The Diggle continuing to compromise himself a little bit in his role with Argus, I think that's a good storyline to follow. Even though we've seen a little bit before, but it is interesting nonetheless. And the Oliver stuff was good. The Laurel stuff was okay. I wasn't quite as into that, but it was fine. And
I thought the Laurel stuff was pretty bad, honestly. Like, I mean,
yeah,
this character, I'm just over it. Like, the will she or won't she of like vacillating between good guy and bad guy is just. I find it insults my intelligence, Greg.
We in the World Wrestling Federation don't believe in antiquated concepts like good guys versus bad guys. Yeah. So, well, I can see it. I didn't think it was that bad, but I do agree. Thinking back on it, it was more boring to me than anything.
Right.
Because
I mean,
we've seen it so many times at this point.
It's especially egregious because, like, you and I discussed this off air. We came into this episode wanting pretty much one thing, and that was a conversation between Oliver and Emiko. And we didn't get that.
Which was not our fault, because sometimes it can be our fault if we put artificial expectations on something. But that was a direct cliffhanger. So this was a classic case of bait and switch to me, where they baited us with one thing and then switched it into something that we weren't interested in.
Right.
Which was Laurel's deal with why is she even there? Why is she a major? Be there, okay. But I will say this: this has been a great season of Arrow to this point. I think we would agree on that. Mm-hmm. This was a step back for me because this felt like those seasons where they've kind of lost their way a little bit because they forget that the show is called Arrow.
Yes,
it's not called Team Arrow. It's not called Laurel. It's not called Diggle. It's not called Curtis, for God's sake. It's not called anybody. It's called Arrow. It's about Oliver Queen. It's his show. And I think when the show is at its best is when it remembers that. And when it's at its worst is when it's trying to serve eight different masters in the form of all the other characters on the show. You can make them good characters and compelling characters while still having their world revolve around Oliver's world. And I feel like in this case, I wanted to see Oliver and how he was going to deal with the emotional baggage and the emotional weight. I'm sorry, baggage and the emotional weight of dealing with discovering that he's got a new sister and how she deals with that. But unfortunately, we didn't get much of that here. And I hope that this is not a sign of things to come, because I've so enjoyed this season at this point, and I don't want it to get bogged down like other seasons have in me having to deal with the Curtis story and the Renee story and the Dinah story and the Laurel story, and then kind of losing track of my favorite character, which is Oliver Queen.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, let's see where the season goes from here. It's also a bit concerning because, like, on The Flash, we have a pretty good indication of what we're building towards, and I'm not really sure what the story of this season of Arrow is really trying to be yet.
Perhaps the build to the Dante reveal.
I suppose.
And he shows up, and he's like, "I'm not even supposed to be here."
And then he's like, and then he takes his mask off. He's like, "Yeah, Oliver, look, you left me in the middle of that building as the earthquake was happening, and now look what happens to you." And then it's Tommy Merlin.
There it is. There it is, folks. Another baseless Tommy Merlin speculation from Nick Duke.
Just wait. I'm biding my time, Greg. I am biding my time.
We're going to have to, like, whatever our episode is scheduled for that week, if it ever happens, we're just going to have to alter it and make the entire first half of the show be you gloating and sniffing.
Quite frankly.
Speaking of things that are difficult to deal with, I'm still not used to finding Emiko attractive. That's just a difficult position to be in.
You know, I got to be honest. Among the women on that show, she would probably be near the bottom in terms of attractiveness.
How would you rank the guys on the show?
Oh, it's clearly Stephen Amell is number one.
Yeah,
there's no question about that. And then I'm trying to think of the other male cast. Wild Dog would be dead last because he has a little bit of the Shawn Michaels lazy eye going on.
Diggle at two.
Diggle at two, and then I guess Curtis at three. If those are the four, right? Yeah. Unless I'm missing someone here.
I think that's it.
Now, if you put the future Wild Dog wig on him, that changes the complexion of the entire thing.
The future Wild Dog wig that kind of looks like a mid-70s rock star. Yeah, that's tremendous. So anyway, Arrow happened, I thought what was there was mostly okay. It was just a disappointing.
Yeah, it just wasn't what we wanted from the episode.
Right.
It almost felt like they didn't have any clue how to write that conversation between the two, so they just chose not to. That's kind of what it felt like to me.
So let's flash forward. See what I did there? To Tuesday and The Flash. This kind of picks up on the themes from the last episode and really recent episodes about Nora keeping a secret, which, let's face it, is roughly 455,000 times more interesting than anything to do with Cicada.
Yes.
So in this case, they've developed this dream machine of sorts that is going to allow them to try to wake up, through some convoluted means, Cicada's daughter from the coma that she's in.
Yeah, this is the miracle machine, right? From last season that they used to pull Ralph out of the Thinker. If I remember correctly.
Yes, the same machine I believe that Batman was hooked into that connected him to the lump, right?
Yes, the lump. He's lump.
Yep. He's in his head.
Yeah, there you are.
So she goes into the Nora, I think, is supposed to wait for the Flash, and they're both supposed to go in together to the mind of Grace because of some sort of defense mechanisms. But instead, Nora tries to go in on her own because she doesn't want any risk of her parents finding out her secret in her mind somehow.
Yes. So Sherlock explains it as you go in pairs because it's mm-hmm. easier to keep from getting lost in someone's mind. But a side effect could be that whoever you go in with, you might experience each other's memories while you're in there. And so, of course, Nora is concerned that if she goes in with a partner that they will then see her past with Thawne. She doesn't want that, so she goes in by herself, and of course she gets lost in inside the mind of Grace.
As you do, and while in there, we get to revisit, probably the most interesting part of the episode was revisiting elements of Nora's remembered past. And when Barry and Iris go in to save her and they get kind of lost in Nora's mind and see that her defense mechanism is the Reverse Flash, we also see Nora's plan to go into Grace's mind backfire when Grace realizes that Nora is a speedster and a metahuman, which she believes to be responsible for hurting her uncle that she loves so much, who of course is played by the abysmally bad Chris Klein, who can't even act well in a dream sequence. And that kind of leads to the implication that Grace herself is going to grow up to become Cicada in the future. And also reveals to Barry and Iris that Nora's recounting of her childhood with Iris is a little skewed, or very skewed, and also reveals that the Reverse Flash is her defense mechanism, which seems to set off some bells in Sherlock's head. Unfortunately, again, while I enjoyed a great deal of this episode, and indeed the focus on Nora and Barry and Iris and their entire familial relationships, it just reminded me that I just can't wait for them to get through this Cicada garbage. I'm so over it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, all the interesting stuff here as it relates to Nora is being driven by the Thawne angle at this point. This was a good episode, don't get me wrong, but it was mostly good and interesting because of the further exploration of Nora and what her deal is, not because of further exploration into Cicada. Although the idea of Grace as a future female Cicada is infinitely more interesting than current Cicada, if only because, in theory anyway, she won't be played by Chris Klein. Now, that'll be the ultimate reveal, Greg. You'll swerve us by bringing future Cicada, and it's literally just Chris Klein in drag, like, wheezing again, and it'll be terrible.
With the future Dyna wig.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, anyway, so ranking him for the week, I think for the first time this year, mm-hmm. put Arrow behind the Flash.
Yes.
Flash number one, Arrow number two.
I would agree with that as well. There was no Supergirl this week because of the Super Bowl, of course.
Right. Which was a thrilling, thrilling game. Mm. And speaking of thrilling games, it's time for our game of reading and watching to come to an end. And for us to begin a brand new, exciting game of our weekly look at the news and notes in the world of comics, a segment we like to call...
Oh, welcome to that rundown, the kooky, kooky rundown. It's where we learn the news and notes of what's going on in comics today. Yeah.
Now, the good thing, Nick, is that I have right in front of me here a list of news stories, PN news stories,
mm-hmm.
for us to discuss.
Yep.
The first of which ties directly into what we were just talking about.
Yep.
That is the CW DC Universe.
Yes.
The Arrowverse, if you will.
And I will.
And the news came out that a Walmart pop-up ad covered up the article, but luckily I know what it says, which is that the CW has renewed its entire comic book slate for the 2019-2020 TV season,
mm-hmm.
which is a huge surprise, Nick, because you and I both have been anticipating, and I think the writers of Legends have been anticipating Legends of Tomorrow getting canceled on the CW, but instead we are moving forward, forging ahead to what is going to be a season 5, I believe, of Legends of Tomorrow.
Indeed.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
I, for one, am very excited about that. I'm excited for all of these shows coming back. Arrow, The Flash, Legends, Black Lightning, Supergirl, all coming back. And joining the slate will be Batwoman, presumably,
yep.
if the pilot delivers.
It's been ordered to pilot, but not picked up for series yet. So,
right. And you can never, as we learned with the Aquaman pilot, you can never be too sure.
No, you can't.
But hopefully that will happen. And again, Nick, it's another step towards my suggestion, and I think your suggestion as well from a while back, that why not just make the CW lineup entirely DC shows? They can keep Riverdale or whatever. It does fine, I know. But other than that, why not just take everything else and make it DC shows? You could have a DC show every night of the week, mm-hmm. sometimes twice a night.
Yeah, I was about to say, well, they already have enough shows to have it. Especially if you pick up Batwoman, then you would have six DC shows that you could air on six different nights. But mm-hmm. you know, we'll see. You know, we say we're all for this until we have to watch them all every week and review them all on the show, and then we'll go back on that pretty quick, I feel.
Well, have to is a strong term, Nick.
That's true.
We don't really have to do anything. For instance, you don't have to watch The Walking Dead anymore.
Nope, I sure don't.
But I do still watch The Walking Dead because I'm a glutton for punishment, and I've actually enjoyed it since they killed off Rick Grimes. Well, no surprise here, though. The Walking Dead has been renewed for a 10th season. Wow, it doesn't seem like it's been that long. Showrunner Angela Kang announced it on her Instagram page, and presumably Kang Ezekiel will come back unless he dies before then. So I know that this announcement doesn't really have much of an impact on you.
Nope.
But for me, who's enjoying the show now again for the first time in quite a while, I'm happy about this announcement. Happy to see how they move it forward, hopefully, and don't retread a lot of the old stuff that they've done.
Well, I'm happy that you're happy, even if you are a glutton for punishment.
I am. I'm a cruising for a bruising. Well, on the other hand, Legion at FX Network will be coming to a conclusion after the upcoming Season 3. That's right, Season 3, the last stand of Legion on FX. And, not much else to say about this. The showrunner, Noah Hawley, said that he has always projected the series to only last 3 seasons, and that the ending will be a natural conclusion. Of course, this is all tied into the impending Disney-Fox merger, but and I still haven't watched Season 2. I enjoyed Season 1, but I still haven't watched Season 2. I need to do that at some point, but gosh, there's just such a long line of shows to watch. Krypton will be back soon, but I enjoyed Legion as it moved along towards the end of Season 1, and I'm sure people are happy that it's going to be able to be taken to its natural conclusion.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of it yet, but I've heard good things, and I look forward to maybe binging it now that it'll be, you know, at some point after the conclusion of the entire thing. So,
get ready for a lot of David over and over again. But it's a good show though.
But it's good to hear that if the plan was originally 3 seasons, that they're getting their 3 seasons and leaving on that pre-planned note.
Well, from one FX series to another FX series, as it turns out. And this is another one that may need quite a few seasons to tell its story, potentially. Why the Last Man has gotten a series order from FX, and the name of the show has been shortened simply to Why. Now, why, one might ask? I don't know that answer. But it's been shortened to Why, and it is now on FX, of course, based on Brian K. Vaughan and P. Aguirre's outstanding series of comic books, graphic novels. One of the great comic book stories of the 2000s, I think, and pretty exciting to see how this will develop, Nick.
Yeah, I'm excited, have been all along about the prospects of this show. There were some...
And much better fit for a TV series than a movie.
Yes, I would agree, unless you were going to do like a trilogy or something. That you were going to, mm-hmm. pre-plan. But the only thing about this that has me concerned is there have been some comments from one of the producers that talking about how they're going to embrace the political climate and really take advantage of the climate to make a commentary. And the comic already kind of did that. And it's pretty relevant for what's going on in our country today. You don't really mm-hmm. need to amp that up, It kind of, because I am a bit concerned about beating you about the head and neck area with its message if that happens.
Yes, I agree with that, Nick, because I think that's something that there's a fine line between making a socio-political point that the book does, by the way, very, very well, that will stand the test of time, and then dating yourself mm-hmm. with contemporary references. And my concern would be that if, and hopefully this will be the case, the climate is different in 20 years, that that will affect the timelessness of this project. Because the book, I can tell you as somebody that read the book many years after it started, it held up extremely well, and it was just as relevant in 2012 or 13 when I was reading it as it was in 2004 when it was coming out. So I agree with those concerns. Hopefully they'll knock it out of the park because it's a great book, it's a great story, and I think people it deserves to be seen by more people. Well, one thing that may not be seen by any people is the long gestating New Mutants film from Fox. Fox producer Lauren Shuler Donner, speaking with the media, mentioned that the Gambit film is now 100% in the hands of Disney. Between us, unlikely to happen. And the New Mutants film, which has already been shot, has been shot quite a long time ago, but now currently scheduled for an August 2nd theatrical release, rumored recently to be moved to Hulu rather than a theatrical release. Shuler says that Shuler Donner says that she wants it to be released theatrically. She would, quote, hate to see it thrown at Hulu. That being said, it looks like Marvel and Disney are already kind of asserting some decision-making power here in this whole process. I don't know where this is going to end up, but I think I hope to be able to see this movie at some point. And, you know, granted, from a sheer cost standpoint, it wouldn't be too bad for it to be on Hulu, but it's probably, you know, presumably it was shot with the theater in mind, particularly if you're going for a horror vibe, and hopefully it will get a theatrical release, even though, man, the issues with this movie make the issues with Solo look minor by comparison, right?
What's interesting about this is Solo, you know, went through creative woes, you know, where they had to change directors midway and mm-hmm. had numerous errors near the end of production. This one has had, you know, I believe it's Josh Boone on it from the jump. He's still working on the film. It doesn't seem like Fox is necessarily displeased with his work. It just – I don't know what to make of this. This is a weird one for sure.
Another weird fit is Deadpool under the auspices of Disney. One of the other aspects of this merger between Disney and Fox that we've talked about on the show that has been a sticking point for me is the concern that the exploration and – risk-taking of the better Fox X-Men movies, which would be stuff like Logan and Deadpool in particular, and New Mutants, if it turns out to be good, would be lost in the shuffle at Disney, which is much more risk-averse. And along those lines, Disney chairman and CEO Bob Iger says that in a recent interview, we, quote, we will continue in that business. There's a certain popularity with those types of films, referring to R-rated fare such as Deadpool. He says, actually, Iger hinted that the R-rated films wouldn't be released under the current Disney or Marvel Studios, but that efforts would be made to ensure, quote, carefully branding R-rated films so we're not in any way confusing the consumer. He still has not come out, despite what some headlines will say, and confirm that they are going to continue the Deadpool series or even continue making these types of movies. He's just saying that there are possibilities, saying may do this and may do that. So I'm filing this under I'll believe it when I see it. So hopefully it's true. Hopefully they will continue making these movies. And more importantly than even that, hopefully they will continue in the spirit that led to these movies, which is taking risks and doing things outside the box. But again, as I mentioned, I will believe it when I see it.
Yeah, obviously I'm more optimistic about this than you are. I have been from the jump. People hear Disney and they think, you know, the Disney Magic Kingdom logo at the beginning of the film, but they own numerous studios that produce numerous types of films, not just family-friendly fare. I believe Bad Santa, for example, was a production that was released via Touchstone, which, of course, is affiliated with Disney. So if they can release something like that, they can release virtually anything. So not a concern for me. I have little to no doubt we will see Deadpool again one day.
And fair enough. My counter to that is they've never done it with any of their established properties. They've never done an R-rated Mickey Mouse comedy or something like that, like we've seen with something like what was that god awful movie that that Melissa McCarthy just did with the puppets?
The Happy Time Murders, which was also not an established property.
Oh yeah, it wasn't. I don't know. I thought it was something like that. But nonetheless, they've not done that, and so that's why I'm hesitant about this. I just think they're not going to like the idea of that Marvel logo flashing at the beginning of the movie, like we see in every X-Men movie, every Sony. It's the one linking thing between all the different movies that we see, MCU and otherwise. I don't think they're going to be happy about that. Maybe they will. Maybe it'll be great, and I'll be the first one here to say I am happy I was wrong. But again, it will remain to be seen. Hopefully it happens. There was also one thing that got mentioned in these that in the last story, actually, that I forgot to mention, which is that Shuler Donner also indicated that there have already been talks about a new Wolverine. So,
which makes sense. I mean, I know, yeah, a lot of people want, and Hugh Jackman himself, even when he was retiring from the role, had said that if he could, he would think about it one day if there was ever an opportunity for him to do a big MCU movie. And as cool as it would be, you're going to want a Wolverine that you can use for a decade going forward. So it's a huge casting decision to make whenever they get around to it. But I think I'm kind of on board with the idea of letting Logan be the swan song for Hugh.
The big thing for me is getting the character right and not making him like the shitty, god-awful, unrecognizable Wolverine that he is in the comics. I shouldn't say is, but has been in the comics for many years. Hopefully they don't lose the rough edges around the character when they do reinvent him. In any event, that brings an end to the rundown, mm-hmm. Unless you have something to add, Nick.
No, I don't.
Very good. Well, look at the time. Mm. You know, on the digitally installed clock on the side of the L-shaped studio here,
mm-hmm.
It indicates to me that it's time for the Wrestling Minute.
Mm.
Nick, I have not watched Raw or SmackDown this week. I am well behind. What you got for me?
The road to WrestleMania is in full swing. I'm very excited about the upcoming SmackDown Elimination Chamber WWE Championship match that will, of course, see the first defense of the new hemp-based WWE title, which is incredible. That's still a thing. It blows my mind. And then the build to the what will likely be the first ever women's match to main event WrestleMania. As of right now, we're looking at Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey. That build's been good, but I think we're all anticipating that will be turned into a triple threat with the insertion of Charlotte Flair at some point.
Yes, all that's good stuff. I'm excited about the build to the road to WrestleMania as well. We usually see this happen where we get these doldrums at the end of the fall and into the winter,
mm-hmm.
And then once the Royal Rumble hits, then we get the build to WrestleMania and the shows start to improve. And now I will say I didn't think Raw, what I saw of it, was very good, but nonetheless, there was good stuff on there to be had for sure. So looking forward to watching those after the show this week and seeing what the rest of the wrestling world has to offer us. So,
yeah,
that brings us to the end of the show. What do we got coming the way next week?
Well, next week we'll, of course, have a very special Off the Page where we're going to take a look back at a film that you and I adore that a lot of other people don't, that being Man of Steel, the controversial first entry into the worlds of DCEU thing that now exists. So we're looking forward to that. And then we're going to wrap up the month with a long book hunt focused on the first volume of the WWE comic from Boom Studios, which is we'll see how it goes. But, you know, Greg, for this week, for the musical appearance from Mr. Jim Ross, you know, you posed a question in our legendary Place to Be Nation comics live chat a couple of weeks ago.
I don't think Mr. Ross is going to be able to help us out with this song, but go ahead.
Where you posed a question asking, what exactly is a Cardi B? Well, Greg, I don't know if you saw, but the Super Bowl was this past week, and Cardi B, of course, the popular rapper these days, female rapper, had an appearance at, during one of the esteemed Super Bowl commercials. So I thought, you know, no better time than the present for Jim Ross to let us know what Cardi B is all about. Take it away, Mr. Ross.
Well, thank you, I think, Mr. Duke. I would just like to say that this week I am doing this song, if you can call it a song, under protest. I do not know the tune to this song. I have not heard the band playing this song.
It's not a band. It's a rapper. Else. It's a performer. One performer.
A rap. Now, what exactly is a rapper?
It's someone who...
You mean like the rapper that I have around my delicious box of Blue Chew?
I suppose, something like that.
No, that's not too bad. How'd they turn that into a song? Now, that's a song that I would like to get into. A Blue Chew song. But, nonetheless, I'm going to give it my own shot here, and I just want everybody that's listening to this to imagine, if you will, that there is a steel guitar and a fiddle playing in the background, making this song sound exactly how sweet it needs to be. Sad little bitch, you can't fuck with me. Well, if you wanted to, these is red bottoms. Oh, these is red bottoms. That's real cute. You know who else had red bottoms? Shinya Hashimoto had red bottoms, quite frankly. He did. He had red bottoms, and they're cute. You know, a little fat wrestler, looks a little bit like a Japanese Elvis, quite frankly. These is bloody shoes, like red shoes. Not my favorite referee in the game, quite frankly, but I respect the man. At the store, I can get them both. I don't want to choose. This is just vulgar, folks. I'm not even going to read this. Don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now. I make money, Muse. I say I don't dance. I don't got to dance. You sing a song, I don't dance. I'm not your puppet. I'm not somebody that's going to go out here and do what the man tells me to do. I believe that you do your job, you do what you're told for the money, but that being said, I also believe that you do what's right. And that means if you don't want to do what the man tells you to do, don't do it. It's very simple. That being said, you should do what you're told at all times. Anyway, I make money, Muse. If I see you and I don't speak, that means I don't fuck with you. I'm a boss. You are simply a worker, bitch. You do... What the ball? You execute the plays that are called, quite frankly. I make bloody moves. Now, who she say she going to do what to who? Well, let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at. You know where I be. You in the club just to party. I'm there. I get paid a fee. I be in and out them banks so much, I know they're tired of me. You know, what that was from those Bill Watts payoffs. Now, people used to bitch and moan, oh, Cowboy doesn't pay us. Oh, Cowboy didn't pay. Cowboy paid you plenty. Cowboy made you earn your keep. And I earned my damn keep. I made a lot of money when I was in Mid-South. But you know what? I made that money through the hard work of traveling up and down the highways of rural Louisiana, meeting Cajun people, the likes of which you would not believe even existed. Honestly, I don't give a fuck about who ain't fond of me. Drop 2 mixtapes in 6 months. What bitch working as hard as me? I don't bother with those hoes. Let these hoes bother me. They see pictures, they say goals. Bitch, I'm who they are trying to be. Voice of an industry. Look, I might just chill in some bathe. I might just chill with your boo. I might just feel on your babe. My pussy feel like a lake. He want to swim with his face. Oh, his face. That's real cute. I get it. Yes, folks. I get it. Make all the jokes about my face that you want to make. It's not funny. Wasn't funny in 1995. It's not funny now. I've been fired 4 times. Oh. And I'm like, okay, I'll let him do what he did when he won. He bought me Yves Saint Laurent and the new whip. When I go fast as a horse, I got the trunk in the front. I'm the hottest in the street. No, you've probably heard of me. Got a bag and fixed my teeth. Hope you hoes know it ain't cheap. And I pay my mom bills. Ain't got no time to chill. Think these hoes be mad at me? Their baby father want a feel. Said, little bitch, you can't fuck with me. If you wanted to, you, these expensive, these red bottoms, these bloody shoes, at the store, I can get them both. I don't want to choose. I don't have to choose. Quite frankly, you have a right in this country to choose the bloody shoes that you want. Anyway, don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance. I make money muse. Say I don't got to dance, I make money move. If I see you and I don't speak, that means I don't want to fuck with you. I'm a boss. You are simply a mid-card worker, bitch. I make bloody moves. If you a pussy, you get popped. If you a groupie, you a op. Like Op Alabama, a town that I once worked when I was just a young lad in this business. I went there with Bullet Bob Armstrong, and I was the referee for a match between Bullet Bob Armstrong and Dale Smith. Now, who's Dale Smith? He went by the nickname the Whippersnapper. Hell of a worker. Lost in 10 minutes, and they told a story. Anyway, you can't hang around my block, and I just check my accounts. Hey, turns out, here's a Twitter headline for you. JR, colon, turns out I'm rich. Go ahead and put that on the internet, bunch of Richards. I put my hand above my hip. I bet you dip, he dip, she dip. I say, I get the money, and I go, this shit is hot like a stove. My pussy glitters as gold. Tell that little bitch. Well, just play a role. I just a rove in a rolls. I just came up in a wraith. I need to fill up the tank. No, I need to fill up safe. I need to let all of these hoes know that nobody's ass is safe. I go to dinner and steak. Only real can relate. And you know, Khosrow Devari, the Iron Sheik, once told me that I was the real. I used to live in the peas. Now it's a crib with a gate. Rolly got charms, look like frosted flakes. I had to let these bitches know, just in case these hoes forgot. I just run and check the mail. Another check from Mona Scott. I said, little bitch, you can't fuck with me. Much of other shit. And anyway, the point that I'm trying to make, folks, and all this rambling, nonsensical mess, the point that I'm trying to make, a Cliff Notes version of this. My producer, Ralph Amore, is talking in my ear here. The point here that I'm trying to make is I'm a boss. You are a worker, bitch. I make bloody moves.
Hard traveling fanboys. Hard traveling fanboys.